members of the media, our staff and officials, members from the National Department of Health, our Deputy Minister, Dr. Sibongi Tene Dlomo, will be joining us in a few minutes. I'll welcome him a day later. He's not yet on the platform. The Parliamentary Liaison Officer of the Minister, Mr. Johannes Knappler. And I hope we're going to have a very fruitful and wonderful discussion this morning. Ms. Michelle Lapanda, if I can please get attendance and apologies from you.
Hello, thank you, Chairperson. This is Dr. Jacob, Ms. Stella, Mr. Sokacha, Dr. Harvard, Mr. Siwela, Ms. Clark, Ms. Wilson, Ms. Ishmael, Dr. Tendekwayo, Mamu Hlengwa, and Mr. Imam Sheikh. I've received an apology from Mr. Van Staden and Ms. Sugars. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We will be receiving presentations this morning from AfriForum, KUSATU, the African Communist Party. Honourable members, we're going to be very tight for time. There has been a request by one of the honourable members that we try and manage our time very well this morning. The buses depart from the parliamentary precinct of villages at 12:30. We are scheduled to sit until 30 after hours, and we have a sitting starting at 2:00 this afternoon. So we will do our utmost to stay on the time, and where we are able to save a bit of time, we will obviously endeavor to do that, and to see if we can get people able to take those buses to the city hall. Before we continue, I also have to remind you, as I normally do, that this is a virtual meeting which is deemed to be the precinct of Parliament and therefore constitutes a meeting of the Committee of the National Assembly for official purposes only. In addition to the rules of virtual sitting, the rules of the National Assembly, including the rules of debate, apply. Members enjoy the same powers and privileges that apply in the sitting of the National Assembly. Members should equally note that anything said in the virtual platform is said to have been said to the House, deemed to have been said to the House, and may be ruled upon. All members who have logged in shall be considered to be present and are requested to mute the microphone and only unmute when recognized to speak. This is because the microphones are very sensitive and will pick up noise, might disturb the attention of other members. When recognized to speak, please unmute your microphone and connect your video. Members may make use of the icons on the bar at the bottom of the screen, which has an option that allows a member to put up his or her hand to raise points of order. The secretariat will assist in alerting the chairperson to listen to questions to speak. When using the virtual system, members are urged to refrain or desist from unnecessary points of order or interjection. We will go straight on to the presentation from AfriForum. They said by Mr. Reiner Guggenhaber. I think it will be supported by Ms. Marianne Du Bois and Ms. Natasha Painter. You are very welcome, Mr. Guggenhaber. You're welcome to show your face. Honourable members, just let us just be reminded to switch on your cameras, which is key. Because we do have of these sessions being broadcast on different platforms. And welcome, Mr. Guggenhaber. You also come to the team for the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, honourable members, for this opportunity. My name is Reiner Divenacher, and I will be presenting AfriForum's input on the National Health Insurance Bill. Now, this presentation will outline the main arguments AfriForum bases its opposition of the NHI Bill on. AfriForum opposes the NHI Bill. I will now begin to share my screen so that you can see the PowerPoint presentation we have. All right. Now, in the first place. Going on to the first slide, the government's track record vis-a-vis the management of state-owned companies such as SAA, Transnet and Eskom inspires zero confidence that national health insurance will be managed any differently. As confirmed by the Auditor General's reports of 2020-2021, state-owned enterprises are hemorrhaging money and placing a severe burden on both the government and taxpayers. Furthermore, the damning findings of the Zondo Commission, in which widespread state capture was exposed, should serve as enough of a deterrent to not monopolize yet another sector. It should be noted, however, that national health insurance will be managed on a much larger scale than other state-owned enterprises, opening the door for even greater failure and financial losses. As such, despite the government's usual empty promises, there's absolutely no guarantee that national health insurance will not go the same way as other state-owned companies. When this considered, national health insurance amounts to nothing but irresponsible gambling with the health sector and therefore with millions of South Africans' lives. I just want to, the next slide, let me just see how that is. Let me just go there. Yeah. Okay. On to the next point, honorable members. The government has demonstrated a clear lack of will to put an end to the systemic corruption plaguing all governmental sectors. Now, it's almost impossible to calculate how much money has been lost to corruption since the ANC came to power. But recent estimates are that South Africa may have lost more than 1.5 trillion rand between 2014 and 2019 alone. Now, this rampant culture of corruption will simply bleed the potential NHI fund dry. The government's untrustworthiness with regard to the management of large amounts of money is further illustrated by the looting of crucial COVID-19 relief funds. Medical Brief investigated the spending of the COVID-19 relief fund between April 2020 and September 2021. It looked into less than 10% of the 152.5 billion that was spent and found that more than one out of every two rand spent had been stolen, and 62% of the scrutinized contracts were found to have been irregular. This brazen nature of state corruption is aptly illustrated by, you know, the implication of the MEC, the former MEC of Health, and even the Minister of Health in the scandal. Now, in the second place, and this would actually render all other arguments academic, the reality is that NHI is simply unaffordable. There is no money to fund national health insurance and no accurate estimates of what the project will cost. Africa analyzed the government's impact analysis study on the national health insurance policy on which the bill is based, and it found clear flaws, intellectual dishonesty, and unfounded assertions in the study, amounting to, at best, a negligent misrepresentation of the national health insurance true impact, and at worst, a fraudulent deception perpetrated on the South African public. Now, the medium-term budget policy statement published in November 2021 stated that a limited costing of the national health insurance amounts to an additional 40 billion per year in funding over the first 5 years. However, an independent report from Discovery Medical Aid found that 212 billion is currently being spent on private healthcare in South Africa. This amounts to 44% of total healthcare funding in South Africa. Thus, if private medical aids are to be eliminated, as the NHI bill stipulates, this 212 billion shortfall will have to be absorbed by the state. Now, due to the dire economic situation and the government's astronomical debt levels, NHI cannot be funded through loans. This leaves the raising of taxes as the only option for funding. Sorry, there was a disruption. I think there's an echo. I think someone has their mic.
Can we try to, sorry, Mr. Dulanav, can we try to sort it out? Is it not on your side, maybe?
No, it's not on my side, I reckon. I think it seems like it's been sorted out. Am I correct?
Right.
Okay. All right. Sorry for that disruption. I don't think it was on my side, but let's continue. As I mentioned, the 212 billion shortfall will have to be absorbed by the state. And the only way the state can do this is by raising taxes. Now, in South Africa, taxpayers are already severely overburdened and have to pay double taxes for privatized essential services such as schools, security, and of course, healthcare. And this is also due to government failure. The already desperate economic situation is further exacerbated by the government's dreadful mismanagement of the COVID-19 pandemic, resulting in a decrease of the already thin tax base. South Africa already has a much higher income tax rate than other countries in its GDP bracket. The economy contracted by 7% in 2020, and the tax base declined by 7.8%. This in a country where it's estimated that 25% of taxpayers pay 80% of all income tax. Now, if taxes are increased for workers to fund the exorbitant cost of national health insurance, it will result in lower take-home wages, increased potential job losses, leaving companies and individuals with less money for saving and investment. This, in turn, will slow economic growth and job creation, thereby disadvantaging the very group that national health insurance purports to assist. And I think it becomes clear against this background that national health insurance will be the straw that finally breaks the taxpayers' back, sending the country spiraling into disaster. Now, there you go. Now, at this juncture, we should also say that public healthcare is already in tatters. The current public healthcare sector is in tatters. This is due to the government's failure to maintain existing healthcare services and facilities and infrastructure. Now, Steve Biko and Charlotte Makeke are the two examples of public hospitals that find themselves in a near perpetual state of ruin due to shortages and general mismanagement. In the 2019-2020 Auditor General's audits of national and provincial health departments, the Western Cape Department of Health was the only provincial health department to receive a clean audit. Now, since the government has shown itself to be completely incapable of managing existing infrastructure, Afrifarm has no faith that it will be able to manage a much larger scale national health system. Now, moreover, before I continue to the next point, moreover, the government's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic has brought serious questions to mind regarding its capability to deal with medical issues. Large-scale overcrowding in hospitals during the pandemic exposed the disastrous state of public healthcare in South Africa. This was shown by a BBC investigation of South Africa's public hospitals in Port Elizabeth during the height of the pandemic in July 2020, which found that the health services were in a state of near collapse due to systemic failures. Furthermore, the government demonstrated its ability to exacerbate problems through ridiculous regulations such as the ban on wearing open shoes, buying cooked food, or the failed medical scooter project in the Eastern Cape. Now, in the fourth place, and this is a very important point, South Africa is already experiencing a brain drain of highly skilled professionals seeking personal safety and better value for taxes abroad. However, the implementation of national health insurance will cause a previously unseen exodus of skilled medical professionals. In June 2021, the South African Medical Association warned that as many as 38% of its 12,000 members plan to emigrate if national health insurance were to be implemented. In addition to this, a further 6% plan to emigrate for other reasons, and 17% said that they were unsure about leaving the country if national health insurance were to be implemented. In the face of already crippling staff shortages, the mass immigration of healthcare professionals is something South Africa simply cannot afford. Now, in the fifth place, although national health insurance will only cater for South African citizens and legal residents, it's unknown what impact the country's unsecured and porous borders, which is another ANC failure, and the constant influx of illegal immigrants will have on the system. In addition to this, there are currently no accurate statistics on how many illegal immigrants are residing in South Africa. Therefore, it's completely impossible to predict what impact this will have on the system. This brings us to the sixth point. And in the sixth place, national health insurance will spell the end of the medical aid industry, with the state becoming the sole purchaser of healthcare and competition being driven out of the health marketplace. Yet, the state is heavily reliant on the private medical aid industry, since it simply does not have the financial and human resources to provide for the healthcare needs of all South Africans. To illustrate this point, private health medical facilities provide large amounts of hospital beds in South Africa, employ hundreds of thousands of South Africans, and contribute greatly to tax income. By implementing national health insurance, the state would destroy an industry it is dependent on, thereby infringing on the public's right to healthcare. This means government would be depriving citizens of pre-existing quality coverage in favor of a system which is unaffordable, unfeasible, and unworkable. It is tragic that the ANC government has allowed the public health sector to deteriorate to such an extent that many poor South Africans do not have access to basic health services. However, this problem will not be solved by destroying the private health sector, which already overburdened taxpayers of funding out of their own pockets. Now, in summary, national health insurance is a project of which the true costs and service needs are completely unknown, but despite this, is still being foisted on the already overburdened taxpayer. By looking at the track record of state-owned monopoly enterprises, national health insurance will be severely burdened by corruption, excessive bureaucracy, mismanagement, and inefficiency. The government is using national health insurance as a way of garnering votes from poor South Africans who have legitimate grievances regarding the quality of healthcare in South Africa. However, national health insurance will not solve these problems. On the contrary, it will lessen total access to quality healthcare by destroying the private healthcare sector. This will in turn also lead to the mass immigration of medical practitioners and specialists. The government is reliant on the private healthcare sector, and the disappearance of its financiers and personnel will bring about a collapse of the entire health system. Unfortunately, it is the poor people of South Africa that will suffer the most as a result of this. Against this background, AfriForum argues that national health insurance is a PR exercise by the government to create the impression that it is paying attention to citizens' legitimate concerns about healthcare. If the government continues its irresponsible course of action in pushing for the adoption of the National Health Insurance Bill, it will further expedite South Africa's transformation into a failed state. Therefore, AfriForum calls on government to recognize the error in its ways and discontinue its power-hungry attempts to create a centralized state monopoly in the healthcare sector to the detriment of all South Africans. The public health system needs to be reformed. AfriForum agrees with this, but the best way of doing so is to start by fixing the current malfunctioning system. This brings us to AfriForum's solution. Professor Alex van der Heerfe from Wits School of Governance wrote a report on national health insurance, which found that current problems are due to inherent weaknesses in the governance framework and not the purchasing framework. In other words, the biggest problem in the current healthcare system is that of governance. Now, as such, a centralized monopoly in the healthcare sector will not address the true issues. The only way to help poor South Africans to gain access to quality healthcare is to reform the current system by getting rid of corruption and mismanagement, as is the case in the Western Cape, but also to further expand the possibilities for private insurers to compete in a decentralized free market to provide services to users. Now, Professor Alex van den Heerden's solutions align with the 2019 Health Markets Inquiry from the Competition Commission's model, which proposes the introduction of more private medical aids into the market in the short term to drive competition. This would reduce costs for users and increase efficiency of the current system. In the long term, the inquiry's model proposes the introduction of mandatory private medical aids. Once the governance issues have been sorted out and the market becomes more competitive. This would be achieved by legislating medical aids to provide low base level healthcare services. It also proposes setting up a dedicated healthcare regulatory authority and an outcomes monitoring and reporting organization. By doing this, there will be no centralized funds that could be looted and the workings of the free. Sorry? Sorry, someone interrupted me. I'll continue with my conclusion. I just think the Honourable Member should take more care in muting their computers. By doing this, and this is the final point of our presentation, there will be no centralized funds that could be looted, and the workings of the free market in a decentralized system will ensure the greatest possible cost efficiency for users. I thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members, for listening to AfriForum's inputs on the National Health Insurance Bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Duvenaka. There are a number of members who want to raise some questions with you this morning. So it would be Honorables Ismail, Munyai, Gela, Slangwa, Clark, Tukacha, in that order. There is a hand that's raised on the platform that of Honorable Sekimau. Honourable, take him
out
before I give to the other members.
Thank you, Chair. Me too, please.
And then followed by Honourable Wilson.
Chair, me too, please.
Are those your questions?
Chair?
Is that for your question?
Yes, yes.
Yes, but I think Honourable Safety Mom is a different point, unless it also has to be noted for the question. Honourable Safety Mom?
No, it's a question that I have for AfriForum.
All right, so you will be after Honorable Structure. I'm going to raise the names again. You mentioned it as Ismail, Munyai, Yela, Langwa, La, Structure, take him up. In that order, Honorable Members.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everyone. I just have a few questions. My first question. Under the bill's current governance and organizational structure, you know, you've highlighted corruption and the high stakes it has, you know, on the implementation of policy and how health systems and departments are run. Would AfriForum then recommend the private sector be included on the board to improve the accountability and legitimacy of the board? And would AfriForum then recommend that parliamentary oversight to be taken to mitigate the threat of corruption? My second question, would AfriForum say the bill in its current form is unconstitutional? And can you please specify, you know, on what grounds? You have touched on it on your presentation, but I just want some more, facts or clarities. My third question, considering that the Office of Health Standards and Compliance presently can't manage to monitor even 20% of our health facilities, and the fact that health facilities need to reach certain compliance requirements, many of our clinics will not meet NHI standards. Do you feel that this will stifle or impact health services to communities, most especially the poorest of the poorest communities? Thank you.
Honorable Munyai. Honorable Munyai. Honorable Gela, please continue.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I've got a question that I want to ask AFCO Forum. Chairperson, it's very clear, Chairperson, that AFCO Forum doesn't want people to get an equal health system in South Africa. And I know very well that during apartheid era, African people were treated unfairly. We did not have equal standard of health. They were not treated well. But NHI is coming with a system that it's going to make sure that everyone is equal in terms of getting a health service in South Africa. But I'm not surprised, Chairperson, and I'm not racist, but I know actually that as black people were treated unfairly in terms of a health system. But the ANC has tried a lot to make sure that currently we have a better health system, even in the public system or hospitals. For instance, we have a number of health facilities that are better than before because of the African National Congress. We've got clinics that are operating 24 hours in the provinces, which before they were not there because of we were treated very bad in South Africa because of the apartheid government. But we really appreciate what the African National Congress government has done so far. And we don't have a doubt that African National Congress will continue to make sure that we fight for the poor, because the previous government or the apartheid government did not care for the poor. And now the African National Congress is trying to correct all the mistakes that apartheid government has done for the poor. So NHI is the only way that South Africans can go or can move to make sure that at least we balance the health system in South Africa. Coming to the question, Chairperson, the presenter has presented their concerns or their...
My first question is the following.
Chairperson, you also argue against using the UK NHS case study for the South African NHI model because the NHS system is going through some challenges. Have you considered the improvement in the health outcomes over time since the implementation of the NHS in the UK? Two, are you familiar with the reduction in mortality rates and increases in life expectancy since the implementation of the NHS in the UK? Have you considered the overall achievement of the UK system on a variant of efficiency, equity, and access indicators? Are you applying that the current system within public and private health sector in South Africa do not have challenges? Thereby, we should continue with the status quo. Lastly, the British Medical Journal published their analysis on the performance of the NHS in 2018, and they observed that the health outcomes in the United Kingdom have improved substantially since the NHS was established in 1948. For example, average life expectancy has increased by around 12 years, from 68 to 80 years. And in fact, mortality has fallen nearly 90%, from 34% 1,000 lives death to less than 4% 1,000 of life deaths. Do you not want to the same for South Africa? That will be my question, Chair, to Afro Forum. But I think we continue, and our government will make sure that we balance the health system in South Africa. Everyone must be treated equally, because currently our government has done a lot to make sure that at least we have a better health system in South Africa. So our president and also our minister for health, they are fighting to make sure that at least people of South Africa, they get equally service in South Africa, despite of your personality, whether you are poor or rich, but you are going to have an equal health system in South Africa, which is a good move from the apartheid government era. I think our government has done a lot and is still going to do more, so that at least all of us will benefit equally. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable Chair, let me proceed with my question. A total of more than 11,500 people attended the hearing fiscally. Of these 11,500, of the total more than 100 people got the opportunity to speak during this public hearing. Of 900 who spoke, more than 800 are calling for this NHI bill to be passed. In fact, many indicated that we have wasted enough time already. We must implement the law, this law, as a matter of urgency, as practical and urgent as possible. Only a few proposed this law. Only a few opposed to this law. Why do you say that those masses of our people who are poor and have no money to pay for private healthcare systems? What is your answer to them? Is it AfriForum's view that access to equitable healthcare for all South Africans should not be considered because of organizations such as yours that have reservation about the experience of government? Does the AfriForum believe in the principle of social solidarity or Ubuntu? Who will be this custodian of voiceless and the needs of our people? Let me address the other key element, Chairperson. Does the AfriForum want to persist? Let me address this question. The issue of a nationalization, it's a myth. And I'm sure I've clarified that in a public discourse. Maybe I would want them to answer the following question. Does the current status quo with racially two dual systems, where 8% of GDP accounting more than 400 billion goes to the few who have the medical aid population of 16%, and the rest of the population have no access to healthcare. And most of the money in these private hospitals are not used in the core health needs, but non-core activities, such as huge money going to the administrators. Is this what pride solidarity? Lastly, Honorable Chair, I must say that number one from the bottom, which is the last issue. If solidarity or AfriForum want to see South Africans divided based on health access to healthcare, this to me seems to be like a laissez-faire.
people that seeks to advance, not even capitalism, racially based capitalism, where the few will have access to healthcare and the majority be denied. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My correction, AfriForum, not Solidar, AfriForum. Thanks.
Honorable Sengwa, I will move on to Honorable Clark and come back to Honorable Sengwa.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to everybody. I've got a few questions that I would like to pose. One, your presentation highlights that the NHI bill is politically motivated. In your view, what is the true intention of this bill? Number two, considering the new health climate COVID has brought upon us, do you think we need NHI now more than ever? Or perhaps it is clearly unaffordable? Just in terms of the 3.8 billion rand that was allocated in order to ensure that we do certain pilot projects around the NHI, and we've actually had no feedback as in terms of what the outcomes were in terms of those pilot projects. Were they successful? Did we find that there are certain aspects that were not clear? As the outcomes, would you say, you know, would that also show you that we have a certain impact in terms of the way government does business, and we're certainly not getting feedback on that. Then we also have billions of rands of medical claims on an annual basis, and what is your view that the costing and the feasibility is not clear on the bill, and these medical claims that cost the government billions and billions of rands every year? What is your view in terms of that perspective? And then just in terms of the NHI grant understanding. So in 2020 budget, Treasury shifted 1.4 billion out of the NHI indirect grant, which funds the majority of NHI projects at the time. The Treasury said the cut was due to slow spending on contracting with general practitioners, mental health services, and oncology services. Similar cuts were imposed in 2019, where 2.8 billion rand was underspent, and the medium-term budget policy now sees Treasury cutting 308.4 million from the NHI direct grant, trimming its allocation for 2021-22. What is your view in terms of that scenario where the NHI grants are certainly not spent on what they are meant for, and they are then returned to national government, to national treasury? Does that give you a clear indication of the way NHI would be managed going forward, in your view? Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Is it me, Chairperson?
Yes, after you, Honorable Sukacho, then be Honorable Sengwa, unless she's back now. I just want to see if she's back. Honorable Sengwa, are you back? Please continue, Honorable Sukacho.
Thank you very much, Chair. Can you hear me?
I can hear you well, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, colleagues. Let me also welcome the presentation. AgriForum has contended that the NHI is politically motivated without any basis of the need for health financing for a reform. I think it is acceptable to disagree on the universal health coverage model if we do not trivialize or dismiss the unjust and
inequities inherent in the current national health system. Now, my first question is, are you not concerned about the skewed distribution of financial and non-financial resources within the national health system in our country? The second one, does it not concern you that most sick people do not have sufficient financial protection from catastrophic healthcare costs compared to those who can afford? And the third one, have you not followed the HMI proceedings to hear how some patients sold their homes and other assets because medical schemes refused to fund their PMB conditions in contravention to the Medical Schemes Act? Fourthly, are you not worried that over and above exorbitant private healthcare costs, beneficiaries of this market are still faced with shrinking benefits, high out of pocket, and dumping to the state facilities of those who have run out of cover? Fifth, from your own analysis, would you say that the per capita expenditure for public and private healthcare services is equitable? If so, please explain how. Another one, what about the disease burden? Have you compared the burden of disease in the public sector vis-a-vis in the private sector, as well as access to healthcare providers within the two sectors? Who must wait longer to see a specialist, or who must die waiting to see a specialist? Where is the greatest need and better access? And then lastly, is there no need to equalize financial risk protection and funded access to healthcare between these two sectors to enhance benefit incidents for all whilst improving better health outcomes, which is extremely important for economic growth and the nation's productivity? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Can I go in, Chairperson, or are we waiting for Honorable Sengwa?
Honorable Sengwa, are you back? Please continue, Honorable Sheikh Imam.
Yes, thank you very much. Chairperson, okay, my first question to AFRI Forum is, do you believe that every human being in the country currently, irrespective of the race, the economic situation they are in, things, do you believe that every one of them is valuable, that their life is important to their families, to their friends, that they should have equally health care that will protect them when they need it most? That's my first question. Now, I'm not sure if you're aware what it is like to be standing in a hospital and being told, no, you are too old, we can't take care of you, we must rather use these resources for people that are younger. And as a result, people that need dialysis and things like that, and once they're over 60, government hospitals are rejecting them. What is your view in terms of that? Thirdly, I see we talk about a long term, and you're correct, absolutely correct when you say that we've had a lot of shortcomings in terms of government institutions, the SOEs and things, the way they manage. We can't run away from that fact. But at the same time, we can't run away from the fact that every person in this country particularly needs to be protected, needs good quality healthcare, which is what they're not getting. Now, I see one of the solutions you talk about, long-term mandatory medical aids. I still don't understand, the majority of the people in this country even go hungry to bed. So I'm not even sure how they will even contribute, even if it's 20 rand or 10 rand a month. I'm not sure how they're going to do that. But I sincerely believe that it is the responsibility of a government and a country to take care of its citizens. So if you can tell me, Dave, when you talk about mandatory medical aids, low value, or whatever it is, how would that be implemented, given the fact that our socioeconomic conditions in South Africa and the social divide and the levels of inequality is so high that the majority of the people do not have a second meal. Now, that's the other thing that I'm... Now, my other question is, who do you believe, sir, is benefit the most currently out of medical aids? Is it the hospitals? Is it the medical aids? Is it the administrators? So that's an important question. I have a particular reason for asking that question, given my research into what I've done. Now, you are correct that we have a massive a problem in terms of recruiting GPs and things. And now, would you agree with me that given the fact that a very great percentage of our people, vulnerable people, underprivileged people live in these rural areas, what would your view be of big business and industry coming to the party to work together with government to be able to address this problem? Because many of these people don't want to go and work in these rural areas because of lack of security and benefits and things. And we all agree there's limited resources available. Do you believe that big business and industry in the country should come on board? Because remember, their success depends on the people in this country. Any business depends on the people of this country. And by virtue of the fact that indirectly these people contribute to the success of big business and industry, what do you think should be their role? I will agree with you that we need to put in stringent measures in place to manage this successfully, given our track record. I'm not going to go in there and dispute that. Chairperson, I will stop there for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to AfriForum for your presentation. I had a couple of probably statements as well as questions. My first question is that considering some of the aspects of this bill, and one of those is denying foreign nationals health care, which goes against the World Health Organization regulations, that amongst other things, we do say that the NHI bill in its current form will need constitutional muster if it goes before a constitutional court. Secondly, you talked about the collapse of the health system, and we know that the health system is collapsed. We've done oversights, we do oversights all the time, and there's no actual health system to talk about, and I'm referring particularly to the public health system. Now, anybody in this country, regardless of who they are, what they are, where they come from, has access to any public health system. I mean, that's common knowledge. You need to go to a doctor, you need to go to a clinic, you can go without charge. The fact is that for most, it's very hard to access those public health systems, and when they get there, the quality is beyond abysmal. They sit for hours, facilities are understaffed, there's no medicines, the basics are not even there. So I then have a concern, and so it's been said that you, AfriForum, actually don't care for the poor, and that is why you are opposing this bill. Now, I have a bit of a problem with that, given the fact that we have been, this government has been in place, or the ruling party has been in place for over 20 years, and the health system has gone so progressively backwards. Would you say that in actual fact, no plans, no budgeting, and no consideration has actually been given to the poor in this country as it stands by the current government. Because if you have a look at the health system as it currently stands, that would be pretty obvious to most people. Facilities to uplift those people in poor areas, to uplift their health, to give them quality health care has been non-existent, and instead of improving over the last 20 years, it has actually gone severely backwards. My other question is, can you give us some idea? You've talked about mandatory medical aid, but my question is, if we have a look at the current medical aid, and I'm dealing particularly now with the two-tier system, what percentage of people on medical aid at the moment are currently people of color, and what percentage of those are white? Because my understanding is that 65% of those people are actually black people who are currently on medical aid. So the two-tier system is obviously not protecting one section of the population. In fact, the two-tier system is working for both. Lastly, I need to question this because it's come up in every single presentation that we've had to date. The role of the minister. Now, we know the current SIU report. We see in yesterday's news that the last Minister of Health has been implicated in yet another corruption report. We know what the Zondo Commission said. And that just gives literally the sole power of running the NHI, of appointing the boards, of hiring or firing, of everything to the minister. What is the alternative? I mean, I understand that you oppose NHI in its entirety at this stage, or basically in its entirety at this stage. But what would be the alternative solution? And what do you think will happen when we have sole buyer, sole supplier? That is problematic. And one of the things that has been said to us is that this will stop any kind of innovation. It will stop people trying to come up with alternative medicines, alternative procedures, the creativity of health. And we have the best health scientists in the world in this country, of that there's no doubt. How will that affect that? And basically, thank you, Chair, that is my question.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for the presentation for today. I've got only three questions for the AfriForum. And the first one is, does the AfriForum mean that there is no single positive attribute in the NHI bill as it is presently that you can acknowledge? Question two, how and where will AfriForum accommodate the majority of the poor black people who cannot afford any medical expense nor provision, whether in a public or a private health sector? By this, I mean those who cannot even afford to buy aspirin for a mere headache, but they are well accommodated in the present NHI bill. The last question is, can you expatiate on the elements of intellectual dishonesty as derived from the flaws, as findings from the government impact analysis study that you quoted on the National Health Insurance Bill? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Sengwa. Are you back? Honorable Sengwa?
Chairperson, yeah. I think Honorable Tengwa put the questions on WhatsApp. Maybe you can read it out.
On WhatsApp? All right, yes. Let me have a look. Thank you. All right, so I'm going to read the questions for Honorable Tengwa. There are two questions. In your oral presentation, you make reference to the government's impact analysis study on the national health insurance policy, and you state that an analysis that clear flaws reflecting
intellectuals on the 2013. Would you please provide examples of the flaws in the impact analysis study? In presentations by other stakeholders, concerns have been raised on the constitutionality of the proposed fund. This was not an aspect addressed in your presentation. What is your, what are your views on the constitutionality of the fund? And I need to come to my own question. Mr. Dovenhofer, I am quite surprised at the manner in which you're presenting what you're up to do. We have taken a distinction as a portfolio committee that we do not refer to political parties when we talk about the NHI vote. We do work as a political portfolio committee as well. But throughout, your reference is to the ANC and the flaws of the ANC. Yet, a very important bill such as the one that we are considering now, where we're looking at quality healthcare, access to quality healthcare to all South Africans, it is still an opportunity for you to want to separate us. And the separation is so clear in your not supporting the bill. Those who have access and those who don't have access. So when I say this to you, it is really with a sad heart. And then secondly, you try to usurp my responsibilities of my meeting by saying to the members to mute their microphones. And you wouldn't even know whether those were the members or not, whose microphones were not muted. So I think that South Africans, we need to get together around what is important for us in terms of the policy required to provide to all of the people of South Africa. And I have to say to you that your tone was really something that I didn't really like. And I've never said this before to anybody. But today I am saying it to you. That I think really we need to try to breach these things and look at the policy. Because that once that you say this clause or this section of this bill is not appropriate in the following sense. It was all about why from your view, the NHI bill is not acceptable. But I was just speaking in general and not speaking to the crux of the matter. And I wanted to really raise this with you today from having heard your presentation. Now, to bring that in context of what I was saying, when I'm speaking to the objects of the bill, which are based on Section 27.2 of the Bill of Rights, which states that the state must take reasonable legislative and other measures within its available resources to achieve progressive realization of the right of access to healthcare services. My question to you is, why does Capital Forum believe that they should take responsibility of improving healthcare services in South Africa to be that your government should not be doing it? Or rather, who should be there doing that? And then I have a very long question for you. You assert that the NHI bill lacks information on the funding flow. Does this mean that you've not read Chapter 10, Clause 48 and 49 of the bill? So yeah, I'm actually bringing you to the bill, which I was actually hoping you'd be speaking about. Have you not read the memorandum of the object? It states that the fund will be financed in various interrelated phases as determined in consultation with National Treasury. And are you familiar with the cost estimates in the bill that are included in the memorandum? This costing exercise includes actuarial costing models commissioned by the National Treasury. Do you not agree with the methodology, assumptions, and cost estimates? Have you undertaken your own costing exercise? If so, please share your report with us, outlining your costing methodology and the assumptions that you have used. Please bear in mind that this is not just a simple exercise of taking prescribed minimum benefits expenditure data and multiplying it by an estimate of the population to be covered. I would also like for you to consider the health market inquiry findings on unexplained increases in utilization supply and demand side is used when factors in your response. So, with that said, Mr. Governor, I would also speak to your submission that you give them reasons why it was not towards universal health coverage for the implementation of the NHI. And it has been mentioned already by some members. I think Honorable Wilson spoke to the World Health Organization's guidance to all countries globally to implement policies that move them towards universal health coverage and towards achievement of a sustainable development goal 2030, including SDGs on universal health coverage. How do you think will South Africa realize this important intervention in our country? And why do you believe that UHC or universal health coverage is being forced on South Africans? Are we not a member of the World Health Organization, as Dr. Tedros visiting us the other day? And do we then not subscribe to the World Health Organization in terms of the principles, policies, and decisions? Thank you very much. Those are the questions which are raised to you. You're very welcome to respond to them.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. First off, I'd just like to touch on your question regarding my tone, as well as implying that, saying that I usurped the chairperson's role in the proceedings. This is my first time presenting in front of the Statistical Committee, so I do apologize for perhaps speaking when I shouldn't have, when you would have handled the situation. I waited for you to intervene, and I just spoke without waiting. I probably should have waited a bit longer. So in that sense, I would like to apologize, but I do not think that there was anything wrong with my tone during the presentation. But I'll come back to that when I get to your question, Mr. Chairperson. Now, to please bear with me, we have a lot of questions, and a lot of the questions, I think, I'm going to try and not repeat myself. So some of the questions, I'll answer them. Initially, I'll answer them extensively, and then later I'll just summarize my answers. So the first question from Honorable Ismail, basically along the lines of, do you think there should be more representation of private medical aids, and is the bill constitutional? Yes, we support this. We think that there should be representation for private medical aids. There should be more cooperation. In terms of the constitutionality of the bill, will it pass constitutional muster? I'm not a legal expert, and we're still in the advisory phase here. We're contributing to the committee, so it's not a legal matter yet, but I have spoken to some legal experts, and we are ready to challenge this in court as well. We do not think, I'm not a legal expert, but we do not think it will pass constitutional muster. Now, the second part of the question, again, this is a lot of the questions focus on this point, and I think it's quite unfair on AfriForum. It's that does the bill, do we, how will it affect the poorest of communities? Again, we have to reiterate this fact that when you look at the government's track record with regards to the management of the healthcare sector and the systemic corruption, look at the looting of the COVID-19 fund, where the poor people were affected most severely, and the government's failure to maintain current infrastructure. This is simply something that the government has failed to provide to poor people. The government has failed to provide quality healthcare to poor South Africans. And unfortunately, and this is the crux of the matter, the NHI bill was unaffordable. It is simply unaffordable, and it cannot be forced on the already overburdened taxpayer. Unfortunately, like I said in my presentation, 25% of the country's tax base pay 80% of all income tax. Now, going on to furthermore, the fact that the bill is unaffordable already renders all other arguments academic. But it will also bring about mass immigration of healthcare professionals, which I mentioned in my presentation. and will bring about the collapse of the private medical sector. So these are all factors that will severely will be detrimental to poor South Africans, much worse than the current already failing system, which it has to be said is due to governance. Now, onto the second question from Honorable Gela. Again, along the lines of, do we want people to have access to equal health services? The Honorable Member mentioned that NHI will ensure that people achieve equal access. That was the Honorable Member's argument. And there was a question about, is the ANC succeeding in the healthcare sector? It was implied by the Honorable Member. Now, also remember, so let me just answer the first question. There's also second questions. Of course, again, AfriForum wants equal access to, we want access to quality healthcare for all South Africans. But the NHI is the completely wrong way of going about achieving this. NHI will basically, it will be the fact that it will be equitable healthcare in the sense that it will be poor quality health access for all South Africans. It will eliminate the private medical sector. Now, second part of that question from Honorable Gela is the NHI model, the National Health Service model from the UK. I would like to reject that proposition because there's no way that the UK can be compared to South Africa. South Africa is already spending much more than comparable countries on in its GDP bracket on healthcare, and it's being we have much worse outcomes, significantly worse outcomes than other countries in our GDP bracket. Again, the question was around, do we want the same for all South Africans? I think we've established we want all South Africans to have access to high-quality healthcare, but the NHI bill is not the way of achieving this. It will be mismanaged. There will be systemic corruption. The current system is already failing. It will be unaffordable. It will lead to mass immigration and the collapse of the private medical sector. All of these factors would be absolutely detrimental to all South Africans, and we want quality healthcare for all South Africans. Now, onto the third question, Honorable Tsidikzi. You mentioned that AfriForum, there's only a few people who oppose this law. That's definitely not true. There are significant amounts of people who oppose this. Proposed legislation. Second part of the question, does AfriForum believe in social solidarity? It depends on what you mean by social solidarity. We agree that all South Africans, especially in the sense of the National Health Insurance Bill, all South Africans should have access to quality healthcare, not just the Constitution guarantees access to healthcare, 27(2) of the Constitution, but we believe that all South Africans should have access to quality healthcare. But the way of achieving this is by further expanding the private medical sector, allowing competition in the private medical sector, and thereby driving prices down. And then, in addition to this, also solving the governance issues that we have in this country, which are in actual fact that are causing the severe problems in the healthcare system. And then in the long term, once we've sorted out these issues, then we can think about compulsory private medical aid to improve universal access to quality healthcare. Now, again, onto the question of a racially divided system, nationalization. There's a second part of the question that nationalization, what do we think about nationalization? Is it a myth? And the third part of the question, does South Africa want to see South Africans divided with regard to healthcare? Certainly not. We have to mention that all South Africans it's not a racial situation. All South Africans are covered by private medical aids, and the destruction of these private medical aids will be detrimental to South Africans of all races. Now I'm going to go on to Honorable Clark. Fourth question. This question especially pertains to the fact that to the first part of the question, whether the NHI bill is politically motivated. We in our presentation argue that it is indeed politically motivated, since It's a way of garnering votes from poor South Africans who are desperate for quality healthcare, but the reason that they don't have access to quality healthcare is in fact because of the government's failure. So we do believe it's politically motivated, but the consequences of implementing this bill will be absolutely detrimental to all South Africans. The second part of the question, COVID-19, did show that the NHI was necessary or not, and no feedbacks on pilot projects, the underspending and grants not being spent on what they intended for. This exactly connects to our previous presentation, the mismanagement of the current healthcare system and the fact that the National Health Insurance Bill wasn't costed properly. So, and especially COVID-19, coming to that point, COVID-19 was managed terribly by the government, especially public healthcare. And this shows that this is not the way to move forward. Public healthcare is already suffering. The COVID-19 relief fund was looted, which is a terrible incident, and was it affected the poorest of South Africans the most. So now I think I'll move on to number five, the fifth question from Honorable Sukhasa. Again, the question was, is NHI politically motivated? Yes, we stated that we believe it's politically motivated. And do we not want to address equality? We do want to address, we do want people to have equal access to quality healthcare, but NHI will destroy the current private sector. It's unaffordable, and it will lead to everyone having equal access to poor quality healthcare. Let's go to the further part of this question, the honourable member's question. Some negative outcomes of the private sector. Yes, of course, there are some reforms needed, even in the private medical aid sector. It's terrible that some people had sold their homes to fund healthcare that wasn't covered by private medical aid schemes. But the best way of doing this, of improving, is not by completely destroying the current system we have and eliminating private medical aid, but rather having private medical aid compete in a more competitive market, and then having the free market drive down prices and improve coverage for users and ensure the best cost efficiency for users. Burden of disease, definitely that is the fact that the burden of disease is higher in the public sector, that's a fact, than in private sector. But that is, again, coming back to my original point, is that it's due to government failure, and the current problem is absolutely a problem of governance, unfortunately, and it's something that we need to address first. How do we solve this? We need to get the corrupt people out of the government, and that's the best way of beginning, and then we can start expanding private medical aid, and then in the long term, once we sort out all these problems, then we can move towards a compulsory private medical aid. But the centralized state fund, which would be susceptible to looting, mismanagement, inefficiency, is not the way to go. I reiterate this. Now I'm going to move on to Honorable Imam's question. Does AfriForum think that every human being is valuable in South Africa, regardless of race? I think this is something that we don't even need to answer. Of course, we believe that every human being is valuable in South Africa. It's a bit of I don't really agree with that question. I mean, it's of course we believe that. I think it's a bit of a loaded question, to be honest. And then it was about my own personal experience. I don't think we should speak about our own personal experiences. We need to talk about the systemic problem and what is actually going to occur for most South Africans if this bill is actually implemented. So then it was the questions were along the lines of what are the benefits from medical aid, and should governments work with business? I mean, the current system is already in place a lot of South Africans pay double taxes, so they pay into the system for public healthcare, but they also benefit from private healthcare. But they pay extra, I mean, double for private healthcare. So in this case, of course, medical aids run a profit, but it's through the free market, and it's something that, of course, can be improved further and reformed. But scrapping the current system is not the way to progress. Now, we're on to Honorable Wilson's question. With the current NHI in its current form would deprive deny foreign nationals or illegal residents in South Africa of coverage. Will it meet constitutional muster? Again, I'm not a legal expert. I'm not employed in a legal capacity at AfriForum, but I've spoken and from our initial conversations, we do not believe it will pass constitutional muster. Let me just see. Yeah, then it was a very important point that the government has already failed poor South Africans through its healthcare system. It's plagued by systemic corruption. Again, facilities aren't maintained. The current healthcare infrastructure isn't maintained. So a larger fund would be an even bigger disaster. Again, in terms of unaffordability, the proposition for NHI is unaffordable. Will cause bring about mass immigration. That's something that wasn't really touched on in the questions of the members, the fact that it will lead to mass immigration. And that's also something that Honorable Wilson touched on, that she asked how it will affect our specialized medical services and our specialists, and it will cause mass immigration of those very specialists, and it will greatly decrease our healthcare outcomes and cause a collapse of the entire health system. So, I think I'll move on to Honorable Tim McGuire's questions. Is there no positive to NHI? In our opinion, we reject the bill in its entirety. We do not believe a centralized fund where the government becomes the sole purchaser, driving competition out of the marketplace, will have any positive effects on the health system in South Africa. In fact, we believe it will lead to the total collapse of the health system. It's very important that this point is being that we have to reiterate this point. And intellectual, this honesty. We did publish a report. You can have a look at it on our website. It's we analyzed the impact analysis study. And we found our findings are available. If one of our members are free to go and look at it, or it's on our website and it's published by AfriForum. There's no time for me to get into that in any more detail, but you can look at the report we published on our website. Now again, on to Honorable Klingler's question. What are views on constitutionality? It's definitely our view that the bill, again, like I mentioned, I think I answered that question already. Then on to Dr. Jacob's question, the final question. I first mentioned I shouldn't refer to political parties. I refer to the government, and the government is being led by a political party. If I wasn't aware of the fact that I shouldn't use the words ANC, I'm not sure if that's the protocol. But I henceforth I refer to the government and the government's failing to provide healthcare service. Now, let me move on to some of your questions. Did we comment on certain clauses in the bill? No, we didn't. We didn't comment on certain clauses. We reject the bill in its entirety. Due to the reasons I've listed comprehensively in this presentation, we reject the bill in its entirety. Again, with the costing, we did comment on the costing of the bill. We've been part of the process from the beginning, and we found it to be simply unaffordable. So how do you think that South Africa should realize the goal of providing universal healthcare? Again, it's simple. We need to solve the governance issue. We need to reform the current system that isn't working. And the way to do that is by getting the corrupt management officials out of the system, having all of our healthcare departments, national healthcare departments, have receiving clean audits. And then we can think about expanding the private sector even further, allowing more private medical aids to gain access to the market, to drive competition and bring prices down for users. That is the best way of ensuring quality healthcare for South Africans, and in the long term, moving towards when all these problems have been solved and greater competition is achieved in the free market, then we can move towards implementing a system of moving towards mandatory private medical aid. I think this basically touches on all of the questions, and I thank you, honourable members, for your time and listening to AfriForum, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Duvenas and AfriForum, for coming to present here today and for all the questions. We are trying to make up time as we go along today, since I had expected in the beginning that we still need to catch the button for the sitting. Any last concluding remarks from you, Mr. Duvenas?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. NHI is unaffordable. It would be prone to corruption and mismanagement. Like everything else the government touches, it would cause a mass immigration of health workers and the destruction of the private medical sector. This would bring about the collapse of the entire health system in South Africa and cause untold misery for members of the public. AfriForum calls for the bill to be retracted. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Gela and Israel, I completed now with AfriForum. If it had to do with AfriForum, you can lower your hand and I will move straight on to the project. If not, you can indicate.
Okay, on the message that I raised with you on WhatsApp, it's got nothing to do with AfriForum. So before we go on to Costa, so please, if I could highlight and escalate this message to you. Chair, you know, previously it was raised by one of our members on the portfolio committee to ask you what has happened, or can we get some conclusion or some feedback on the submissions submitted to Parliament, you know, with the fire, and we don't know what has been lost and what has not been lost. I know you said you're going to be inquiring and coming back to us. I think it's important that we get a response on that, please, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Ismail, I must say I don't have that answer for you yet, and I will make every effort now to get that for you as we are possible. So if I can revert to you, thank you. We are now, honourable members, going to welcome the representative from the SATU. I see Matthew Clark on the platform. You're very welcome, Mr. Matthew Clark, and whoever else will be presenting or will be representing today at the NHI public hearing. You can please introduce yourself and your other members, and go straight to your presentation. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks for thank you much, Honourable Chair, and good morning to all the members and to our colleagues and comrades. My name is Matthew Parks from the Congress of South African Trade Unions. I'm joined by a colleague, Dr. Mela Molito, as well. Yes, we're quite pleased to be here and to raise COSATU's views on the National Health Insurance Bill. I'll just upload our presentation quickly. So I think, Chair, we'll just jump straight into it. Let me say, first of all, as COSATU and our affiliate unions, we support the National Health Insurance Bill. I think the fact that we're having this discussion today, and just listening to the previous discussions, this is not about government's failure or successes. It's also about the private sector's failure to provide healthcare. Honourable Michael Corwin, the former president of Mbeki, spoke about 20 years ago in Parliament, he said that South Africa of two nations, and he was lambasted for it. But if you look at the healthcare sector right now, public, which supports about 84% of our population, is struggling to provide quality healthcare to largely African colored women, poor people, only consuming about half of the what they spend on health, the expenditure on healthcare, versus the private sector healthcare industry, which only caters for about 60% of the population, but consumes an equal amount of money, largely caters for the wealthy or those who are fortunate enough to have medical aid. So the EU does speak to two nations, and what I have right now is also affecting the healthcare sector as well, but it's simply unsustainable. I have many family members who work across all sectors of the economy. These include nurses and doctors, paramedics. It includes workers who are fortunate to have medical aid, like police officers, teachers, public servants. It includes many workers who simply cannot afford medical aid in the retail sector, in the agricultural sector, construction industry, and so forth. We have workers who have medical aid but struggle to afford the payments. So, as Kusanati, we do welcome the National Health Insurance Payment. It's a progressive, it's necessary, it's a decisive response. Kusanati's long-standing call for affordable and quality healthcare for all. And we urge honorable members to ensure its speedy passage by this parliament. We believe it will help to provide quality healthcare to over 50 million South Africans who are struggling. We think it will help to ease the burden on the 8 million workers who are battling to pay for exorbitant medical aid premiums. We think also, Commissioner, it will help to address one of the key legacies of apartheid in terms of inequality. So, Chair, I think that our current healthcare systems need to be overhauled. The financing arrangements, the management, the ability to deliver quality healthcare services, they have to be fixed. Our public healthcare, yes, it is dysfunctional. It often offers poor quality services. We all know those stories. We also have to say, Commissioner, that access to quality healthcare is, frankly, is dependent upon one's geographic location. Do you live in a city, one's race, your employment status, your income, your gender. There's a real unequal distribution of health expenditure, and a deteriorating state of public healthcare requires us to build the NHI. You might also recall, not so long ago, there was a health market inquiry which confirmed the inequalities of our healthcare systems and inherent flaws of commercializing healthcare, of reducing it to a commodity where profit is put above the lives of ordinary people. I think, Chair, this is a moment for us as a nation that we must show courage to make resources available, to build and develop the institutions and technical capacity to confront our concurrent epidemics, be it poverty-related diseases, infectious diseases, HIV, AIDS, and TB, maternal child care, child deaths, non-communicable diseases, violence, and injuries. Ms. Kusato would long championed an NHI, which we believe will help to resolve our health inequalities. We don't think we should believe the doom and gloom projections. We think they are driven by vested interests, often at the instigation of the healthcare industry, which has placed excessive profits and greed above taking care of the public at large. Be frank and honest about the state of our public healthcare sector. We face real challenges of poor quality and inequitable access to health services. Some of these are because of poor governance, inadequate management capacity, aging administrative systems, inequitable funding, and human resources shortages, for example, nurses, etc., inadequate and poorly maintained infrastructure and equipment, but also fragmented information systems and wastage. But having said that, Chair, we must not think that everything is perfect in the private sector. There are different types of problems, but they're equally significant. The private sector is marked by unaffordable prices, the maldistribution of providers and facilities, over-servicing, perverse incentives, and a lack of accountability, as we often see from medical aid recipients' complaints. So, Chair, in terms of the bill, we support the purpose and application of the Act. We believe it seeks to ensure equitable and fair distribution and use of healthcare services. We do believe we have one proposed amendment to it that the Act's purpose should be strengthened to include primary healthcare, which we believe is the foundation of the NHI, into the heart of its financial sustainability, and it will help ensure success in relation to the health objectives. Bringing healthcare as close as possible to where people live or work, or constitutes a foundation for an inclusive healthcare system. Changes in the population coverage in the bill, we support the bill's scope of providing for universal health population coverage. Basically, in essence, for all persons legally resident in South Africa and emergency care for undocumented migrants. We think that this provides the correct balance between the values of the constitutions, adherence to South Africa's laws, but also international commitments and financial sustainability. We do appreciate the Juggling Act. Chair, the rights of access to healthcare services and the rights of users. I think, Chair, as you said earlier, Section 27 of the Constitution is quite clear. This is a constitutional matter. Everybody has the right to have access to healthcare services, including reproductive healthcare. We support the provision in the bill which speak to this, as well as Section 6O, which distinguish between essential and luxury or cosmetic healthcare services. We think distinction between these will help provide relief to workers who cannot afford high premiums, which are often used to subsidize cosmetic and luxury services provided by medical schemes and their subsequent annual above inflation increases. Chair, healthcare service coverage will also support the provisions for healthcare service coverage, which require a user to first access healthcare services at a primary healthcare level as an entry point into the system. Secondly, to adhere to referral pathways prescribed by healthcare service providers or establishments. And then thirdly, if they're not able to do so, they're not entitled to healthcare services purchased by the fund. We think that's a correct way. We have to adjust our behavior in that regard. And for example, we can look at positive international examples of that from Cuba, from Sweden, Norway, etc. Chair, also welcome the reaffirmation of the primary healthcare as a critical component of the NHI. It's a foundation for it. We believe that primary healthcare engineering and building a strong district health system is critical to reorientating our health system away from the presently dominant and financially unsustainable hospice-centric and curative healthcare approach. In terms of the fund, we support its establishment. We believe it should be a single fund level to leverage monopoly power through strategic purchasing of services and contracting arrangements. And this will really help to save costs through economy of skills. And we can see other examples of this, for example, in government purchasing textbooks. They can save significant funds for everybody. Chair, in establishment fund, we want the NHI funds to be fully functional during the last phase of implementation. We believe that unless government actually plans ahead and begins the process of implementation, there could be serious delays, and this could undermine NHI's credibility. I do appreciate this incremental process. The establishment is a company, public entity with specialized skill, technical skills and infrastructure will require adequate time to be built and be fully functional. And hence, we've been aware at times when we've seen the budgets tabled by government will not be sufficient resourcing of this process. But I hope that will be addressed in future budgets. So, in the functions of the fund, I mean, we want to support those providing the bill, in particular Section 10G, which states that the fund must determine payment rates annually for healthcare service providers, health establishments, and suppliers. I think that's really fundamentally critical to protecting the NHI and the public. Also help to ensure the NHI is not vulnerable to exorbitant prices, above inflation medical cost increases, and it will help, we believe, to ensure South Africa progressively realizes the constitutional right to access to quality healthcare and through a sustainable, equitable, and efficient public funding to purchase healthcare services and products. Currently, we know that healthcare inflation is far above the CPI and often is simply because of monopoly power. In terms of the board of the fund, we support its establishment. We think it's going to be critical to protect the NHI from unethical and illegal activities. The board speaks for the board to have appropriate technical expertise and skills and knowledge, experience in healthcare service financing, health economics, public health planning, monitoring, and evaluation, law, actuarial sciences, information technology, and communication. And those are all fine. But there's a small distinction. The white paper on the NHI called for the board to include those expertise and skills, but also specifically mention labor as well. And again, I think just to mention, we've finished all the previous discussion in this committee. One of the major concerns, I think, of everybody, irrespective of a political party, is to protect the NHI, and to ensure the state has capacity to manage the NHI fully to protect it from any illegal activities. So I propose that the chair, well, let me say first, we do welcome Ms. Kosato, the inclusion of organized labor in the advisory committees established by the minister in the bill for healthcare benefits pricing, as well as the stakeholder advisory committee. But we do want to make a proposal that on the board itself, there should be provision for organized labor, as well as other key stakeholders. We think this will just help to strengthen the good governance systems, accountability, transparency, and so forth. Chair, in terms of the aspects around the CO, we welcome the provision providing for the appointment of the CO, but we might be confused and unsure about Section 20, which proposes two units which essentially look at combating corruption. Section 20, going to the state, the CO will be responsible to establish an investigating unit within the National Office of the Fund. And just shortly after that, Section 23I, the CEO must also establish a risk and fraud prevention investigation unit. I'm not sure what are the difference on these two functions. If there's a fundamental difference, then we propose that they simply be combined. Section 23I will delete it if it's a duplication. But if there's a difference, then perhaps we just need to clarify more clearly the different roles amended. Changes to the roles of the Department of Provinces, and we support the provisions for the role of provinces. We believe as a trade union federation, this will help to ensure the job security of health workers in the provincial departments. We also want to say, as Kosato, we believe in the centrality of patients and health workers as a key foundation for the NHI. The centralization of the NHI fund and procurement health products under it should not cause job losses for those workers currently performing these functions in the provinces. And if there are workers whose jobs might be displaced by the centralization of the fund, they should be absorbed, they must be absorbed in other areas of the NHI fund. Share medical aid schemes. We support that under the NHI medical aid schemes will offer complementary services not covered by the fund. We must restate that random medical aid increases have significantly lower workers' wages and the ability to care for the families. Medical aid increases far outstrip inflation every year. This does undermine collective bargaining. It undermines the right to health because it's compromised by large co-payment requirements. And then again, pickpocket workers are the small wages. The high monthly payments for medical schemes do not sustain health needs of users for much of the year, and they really exacerbate access to quality health care. We all know that medical members whose day-to-day benefits are exhausted by Easter if they have children. This is a result of the overfinancing of private health sector. We said that as a nation cannot achieve equal access to healthcare if finance is dominated by the private sector and profit is at the heart of it. Private sector finance is not guided by the goals of social equity or ensuring increased access to health. It's about profit. So this financial movement has made it difficult for the state to execute its constitutional obligation to provide affordable quality healthcare. I'm interested in looking at the role of bargaining council units, clinics. Section 37.1 provides for contracting units to manage the provision of primary healthcare services. For example, the prevention, the promotion, curative, rehabilitative, ambulatory, home-based care, and community care. There have been many training victories in bargaining councils where we have established workplace clinics. These have helped to provide accessible and quality primary healthcare for workers and even for the families. We've seen, for example, in COVID-19, how the clinic industry through the sector and food industry was able to help roll the vaccine campaign to thousands of clothing and textile workers into the families in a supportive role to government. So we think these bargaining council clinics can provide role models for primary healthcare at workplaces and communities. So this speaks to strengthening primary healthcare and for a high quality and effective primary healthcare service and the foundation for the NHI. These services are population orientated with extensive use of community-based services in addition to PHC facilities. So we will simply call as Kosato for bargaining council clinics to be included in this PHC facility network provided for by the NHI and to be coordinated through the contracting units for primary healthcare. And they can be an integral partner of their district health services. Chair, on the financial matters, we believe that NHI must be funded through a variety of mechanisms. One is general revenue, that's existing public health care expenditure. We think there's a need for some taxes on high-earning self-employed individuals, the payroll-linked progressive contribution tax, tax on high-earning individual taxpayers, and contributions by employers. We want to say there should be no increase to VAT, which is an aggressive tax, which is the poor disproportionately. We want to see an end to co-payments, because people workers are already paying through employer taxes. And of course, I think there's a general agreement that tax subsidies to medical aid scheme members would come to an end as we move away from that regime. So we think that initially for us a public fund and a minister with no outsourcing of administration. So just in terms of general taxation, we think yes, so the general national revenue to pay or the fiscal to pay a key role, but additional fund mechanism will be needed. And of course, critical to increasing tax revenue is to growing the economy. So companies can pay company tax, or workers can pay income tax, VAT, etc. And of course, we recognize there are many competing and pressing demands on the fiscus. But this is health is an essential weapon. There's nothing greater than life. So we think we will need to expand the tax net and to make sure to introduce more progressive and new taxes targeted for the wealthy. Chair, the payroll taxes, we think we support the requirement for mandatory enrollment and mandatory prepayment arrangements. There should be a payroll tax levied on employers. We might need to have some consideration for exemptions or easier regime for SMEs where needed, not to be abused. But just because we're not contributing to the employer's premium, so a shift to a payroll tax, we don't think there'll be an additional burden, but merely a placement of one cost with another cost. But it should be in the interest of employers to invest in the health of their workers because this boosts productivity levels. Should a such charge on taxable income or an NHI tax, we propose a progressive earmark tax, levied not only on wages of the wealthy but also on their income from financial assets and investments. This must be on a sliding scale to ensure equitable contributions and social solidarity. This will have the benefit of being more broad-based, as it will include many workers who currently do not have health insurance. It will include wealthy individuals who are not employees, no employers, and it will also include the self-employed in proportion to their ability to contribute. So we think there is a need for some discussion, obviously led by SARS and etc. and Treasury, on possible wealth taxes on inheritance and estate duties, as well as luxury imports. On the tax on currency transactions, financial transactions, etc. So, Chair, just coming to the conclusion, hope I didn't take too long. I think the essence is Kusar to our affiliates. We do know some affiliates have already come, Denosa and Mahari, Sakto, and so forth. But we want to conclude by restating Kusar's support for the NHI bill. We also just want to highlight some of our proposed strengthening of the bill in terms of the design. One is to include in the objectives, the primary healthcare approach as envisaged by the Act, we believe is the anchor for the NHI at the heart of its financial sustainability and its health objectives. In terms of the NHI board, we think there's a need for broader representation of key stakeholders as envisaged by the NHI white paper, and this should specifically include organized labor. We think this will help, this will be key to protecting NHI from any abuses in future. So we do think that there is completely clear on the two fraud investigation units established by the CEO, and either there needs to be some clarification or if it's a duplication to simply delete one. Chair, we also want to state that the Federation that the centralization of funds and the health supply procurement must not result in job losses for healthcare workers and provinces, and if there's any jobs at risk, they need to be absorbed in other funds through the NHI. And lastly, Chair, I think just to state our call for the inclusion of bargaining council PACs in the primary healthcare facilities network. They can be contacted by the fund and be an integral part of their PHC service delivery platforms and really help to support and making comprehensive promotive, preventive, curative, rehabilitative services accessible to all, especially at the workplace. And of course, they'll be coordinated through the contracting rules for primary healthcare. And of course, lastly, Chair, I think there is a need for some additional source of funding, such as wealth taxes, taxes on financial transactions, etc. So that's our presentation in a nutshell, Chair. Recognize you just to say, Chair, that we speak with the NHI board, it's land of the June. I think we must also ask ourselves, is it affordable to continue this trajectory where 84% of the country does not have access to quality healthcare? The market is not a solution to it, because these workers are not going to afford medical aids in our lifetime. So in essence, we'll be condemning them to death for diseases that are really preventable, and we really need to look at a radical opportunity to ensure we're a much more equal society that cares for everybody. But yeah, thanks very much, Commissioner, Chair, Honourable Chair members, and yeah, we'll be happy to answer any questions. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Park. Consultation. I have a number of honourable members who want to raise some questions with you. It's Honourable Gela, Ismail, Clark, Wilson, Abbott, Sukacha, Munyai. I'm going to repeat. Gela, Ismail, Clark, Wilson, Abbott, Sukacha, Munyai. Any other members, please shout on the platform if you still want to raise questions. In that order, honourable members, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation from COSATU and also welcome the support of COSATU for NHI to be implemented. You have requested that there should be a broader representation by key stakeholders on the NHI Fund Board. My question, is this a request over and above the participation of unions and civil society in the stakeholders advisory committee as outlined in section 27 of the BN? My second question, can you please clarify your recommendation with regard to co-payments? You have stated that there must be no co-payment, as those who can afford to pay will have paid a true employee taxes. The NHI white paper states that NHI card holders will not be expected to make any out-of-pocket payments, such as co-payments and user fees at the point of healthcare delivery, subject to those card holders following this treatment care pathways and the referral to higher level of care. Are you recommending that the co-payment be abolished even if the members bypass the treatment care pathway? Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, and thank you for your presentation. I just have a few questions. My first question, the presentation mentions that a single purchaser and single buyer model ensures that the fund is not vulnerable to exorbitant prices and above inflation cost increases. Is the first in the implementation of our procurement laws. Now, according to the PFMA and the National Treasury instruction to date, departments are meant to advertise tenders with details such as price, company name, award dates, etc. In addition, the PFMA highlights that price is the first indicator that should be considered when awarding tenders. Now, we've already seen clearly in the SIU report, tenders were awarded to companies that overcharged for products or services. Considering the flaws in implementing procurement rules and regulations, how do you actually foresee this as lowering prices? My second question, how is the fund protected from ANC cadres seeking to fill their own pockets, as we have seen in the digital bias scandal? What suggestions can you provide to protect the fund from political interference? My third question, do you consider the bill to be constitutionally aligned? Would you view the bill as it stands to be potentially xenophobic in its type of inclusion or exclusion of asylum seekers and or refugees? Does Kosato not feel that the freedom of choice has been infringed by the bill? My first question. We know that presently many doctors and nurses are waiting to be placed. Considering that the Office of Health Standards and Compliance presently can't manage to even monitor 20% of our public healthcare facilities. We know under the NHI, all healthcare facilities will not reach certain compliance requirements. This would lead to many facilities not being allowed to operate. Won't this really impact service delivery to the country? Also, won't it negatively impact on jobs of these healthcare workers? Do you feel that the bill will stifle innovation in the healthcare system? And under the NHI, most of our professional healthcare workers will leave the country. My last question. While we understand that the private healthcare sector may not be 1,000% or 100%, do you agree that the private sector is complementing the public sector, especially taking into consideration the failing infrastructure and shortage of staff at public healthcare facilities? You know, if we can just look at the COVID pandemic and how this was handled in the country. If it wasn't for the private sector, many more lives would have been lost. Would you not then consider, or would you then not agree, that we should first look at fixing infrastructure and addressing the placement of doctors and nurses, thus improving the healthcare system before even implementing the NHI? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Doc.
thank you, Chairperson. And my first question, was the consultation you've held with your members in the health industry, do members or the healthcare workers generally support this bill? What are their major concerns? COSATU is in support of the NHI fund. What challenges and risks do you foresee with the management of the fund, especially considering the $13.3 billion that has been mismanaged by a variety of departments across the country, as highlighted by the COVID Corruption SIU report? Three, you mentioned your various recommendations to increase taxes to support the NHI. You compare South Africa to France. The success of France's NHI funding method through taxes cannot be compared to South Africa. A brief Google search highlights that France has 40 million taxpayers within a 67 million population. South Africa, on the other hand, has a 22 million tax base with a 60 million population. Is this not a distortion? How can a small tax base support such a large population? Did you consider the possible negative effects on the currency transactions for international investments? I thank you, Chair.
Honourable Wilson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry, I'm just struggling with my system here. There we go. Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Park. Thank you for the presentation from COSATU. I'm basically covered by previous questions. I just have a couple of things that I would like to raise. So in the last 10 years and longer, we have seen a systematic collapse of the public health system in South Africa. In principle, any person in this country, regardless of where they come from, regardless of who they are, should be able to go, or are allowed to go, to any public health facility, whether it be a clinic or a hospital, to get health care at no cost. The fact remains is that at the moment, despite the fact that they're allowed to go to any health facility, which in itself is a form of universal health coverage, they are unable to access many because they are too few, and when they do get there, the quality of health care that they are afforded is next to nothing. Lack of resources, funding infrastructure, no medicines, etc. In light of this, and in light of the decline over the last 20 years, what would you say the cause of this decline in health is? It shouldn't have happened, and yet it does, and yet it affects the majority of the poorest of the poor. Who is to blame for this, and what has created this problem? That is my first question. And in terms of medical aid, so you prefer to represent the employed, who are already paying taxes, and NHI is going to require yet a further tax. Given the light of the unemployment in this country, and it is steadily increasing as opposed to decreasing, how do your members feel about this, and how is it going to affect those people going forward if we are going to get fewer and fewer people employed in this country? I think, Jim.
Thank you, Chair. I just have one question. Can Kofatu elaborate further why we are not supporting of VAT as a source of revenue for the NHI? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me thank the presentation from COSATU, and I want to have a few questions from COSATU. The first one, Chair, I really want to thank the presentation by Mr. Parks. It is very progressive and talks to the poor of this country. Here is my question, my first question, Chair. We have heard on this platform and from many other platforms when we are conducting these hearings, from those who are opposed to the bill in particular and the NHI principle in general. What we have heard them saying clearly include the presenter that was just before you from AgriForum, that they will take government and this parliament to the Constitutional Court, because according to them, this bill, when it becomes law, will not pass the constitutional muster. Now, with all those threats of going to court to block this noble cause, the cause of ensuring that the poor of this country have access to quality and affordable health like them, in other words, like those that have got the haves, the rich people. What is your response and the response of the 2 million members that you represent, considering that the 2 million people you are referring to do not even include other poor people who are voiceless and do not have anyone to talk on their behalf? What is COSATU saying to these threats? And Chairperson, my second question to COSATU will be, let me just check where is my documents now, we note your support for the NHI and specifically the recognition of the benefits of economies of scale on the strategic purchasing. We've been told that the monopsy power crowds out innovation. Now my question is, what is your view on this? Please share with us your thoughts on the positive and negative side of monopsony. Then my third question, we have questioned us that the NHI must not be vulnerable to exorbitant prices and above inflation medical cost increases from providers. The bill outlines the role of the Healthcare Benefits Pricing Committee, supported by or supporting the Benefits Advisory Committee and the Office of Health Products Procurement in healthcare pricing issues. Does this not address fully your concerns about tariff determination? Have you also read Clause 41, which outlines how service providers will be remunerated to contain cost. And the last question, Honorable Chairperson, to COSATU, from your presentation, COSATU has stated its unequivocal support for the NHI. Can COSATU clarify how it is preparing its membership from migrating from the current two-tiered disposition of those on the medical aid coverage and those without medical aid coverage for the NHI? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable Munyai?
My first question, Honorable Chair, is as follows. I think I've noted a presentation by COSATU in support of the NHI unequivocally. On COSATU, can COSATU clarify how it is preparing its membership from migration? I think this my colleague asked this question. I just want to really welcome the statement by COSATU presenter, who argued that, open quote, by failing to implement NHI, we are condemning the workers to death through the burden of communicable and uncommunicable disease, close quote. Can the presenter clarify further? How does the COSATU address this myth of nationalization, myth of advancing universal health care coverage without NHI? During the COVID-19, the private sectors and public sectors were overwhelmed. To some degree, Honorable Chair, we have noticed that the private sectors are taking their patients to the public healthcare sectors. Like I'm saying, I must underline, both private and private and public sector hospitals were overwhelmed. I want to understand as to and some of the workers were calling for, massively the members of COSATU were calling for urgent implementation of the NHI. What is your view now as a presenter before COSATU? And the last question I must ask, Honorable Chair, is as follows. There are those that are calling for federalism in a unitary government state, which will demand constitutional amendment, that believe that status quo must remain. The 400 billion, which is accounting to 8% of GDP, must remain in private sectors, hence the private medical aid, and also most of the costs are going towards administrators, which is non-healthcare cost. What is your view about this really inequality that is so huge? I think you have mentioned it, that 15% are receiving the most of the money, and yet the rest of the population are excluded. Can you please expand on that metric? I think you established whether COSATU believes that let me just go to my question again, Honorable Chair, because I put in my various notes book here, so because it's very important, because COSATU again raised the following issue, that they want NHI to be done now. How soon? It's now. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Members. Did I exclude anyone? I think Honorable Flengwa, no, she did not post.
any question on Kusatu. So, Mr. Parks, thank you very much also for your presentation. Again, we appreciate you coming to do this presentation. Now, I want to speak about two points. One is your concern about the primary healthcare approach, and the other one would be on the sections which you quoted, would be the application section 22, section 2, section 20, section 2, and section 20, subsection 3. So, in terms of the primary healthcare approach, I would assume that you probably just emphasizing the importance of primary healthcare within the context of the NHI goal and within the context of the NHI. Because I am certain you'll be aware it's been mentioned over 35 times in the book, and that there's a particular section that speaks to section 5255B, that the benefits advisory committee must determine and review the healthcare service benefits and types of services to be reimbursed at each level of care from primary healthcare facilities and the district regional and tertiary hospitals. And then in terms of your understanding of the sections which I had mentioned earlier, and of which it's important to having understood your understanding of these two sections. But I thought that my understanding was that there are two units here. One speaks mostly on the preventative measures which that unit must conduct in order to prevent corruption and fraud. And the other one actually speaks about investigations to be done where there is existing, where there are existing complaints, corruption and fraud. Do you think that, therefore, that one team would be able to do both the prevention work and then also to do all the investigative work that would be required in terms of these sections? Thank you very much. Those are all of the questions we need. Please continue to answer them.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, Honourable Chair members. Yes, no, thanks for the questions. So just to jump straight into it, I think to Honourable Daniel, I think just to appreciate the comments, I think on the issue of the NHI board, so we do appreciate the provisions they made for organised labour and stakeholders and some of the committees to do with pricing, stakeholders, etc. But we think that there's a need as well for labour and for the stakeholders to also be included in the NHI board, which plays a much greater oversight and governance perspective. And I think it's useful to share because to manage the issues of abuse, or potential for abuse or corruption, etc., as we've all seen, and I think all of us are opposed to. But I think that also changed also in line with the NHI white paper call. So I think for us it is quite a critical thing. It's not only part of the government's approach to key entities, boards, etc. We think it will help to build inclusivity, help to build transparency and accountability, and help for all stakeholders to take ownership of the NHI as well, because it won't just be simply a government entity, but it will be an entity belonging to everybody in the country. So in terms of the issue of co-payments, yes, we want to see co-payments being a thing of the past. We think they are based upon excessive charges charged by providers. We think it's also a model application by the medical aides who dumped this bill on the medical aid members. It bleeds workers and money they simply do not have. It often inhibits workers from going and getting the care they need because now they need to budget as well for co-payments. So it really is pickpocketing workers to satisfy the profits of a very elite industry. Do you think that if workers are paying via payroll taxes through the employer, whenever we should cover the cost, there should not be a need for the co-payments. And of course, it does speak to the need to manage to protect the NHI from profiteering, from excessive price increases, etc. So there's a need for a balancing act, but it's quite a fundamental one. So we agree with those provisions for the sequencing of patients, that they adhere to the sequence. They will go to a primary healthcare provider and follow the pathway. And if they don't do that, they wouldn't be assisted. Do we have to give them that right to avoid clogging tertiary institutions with people who should have just been treated at a primary healthcare facility, for example? And we can see positive international examples that speak to that. Cuba, Sweden, Norway, etc. Social community of scale around procurement is critical. Many of the medical aides themselves are struggling to survive. Many of them are simply closed because our charges imposed by the hospitals, etc., are simply unaffordable. But the example that has been dumped upon medical aid members, upon workers, etc. So I think the government public procurement will play a critical role to manage the excess of crisis. It can also be a huge opportunity for us to build a local manufacturing capacity as well. And we've seen the most positive example there from recently on the pharmaceutical sector, developing and building local vaccines. But even from the work we had done as COSATU and NABLAC with business with the Department of Health in 2020 to build local manufacturing capacity for the PPEs. These are huge opportunities to create jobs. There's no need to import things which you can build locally. Which has this picture of what Ishmael is saying to overhauling a public procurement system, which right now is a cesspool of corruption waste. We have a single online transparent public procurement system, which really does cover the entire state, and it must be transparent so that every company submitting an application, the media and the public can see and scrutinize it. The best way of dealing with corruption is really transparency and scrutiny. We've had lots of engagements with the president or the minister of finance around making sure the public procurement bill, which is due to be tabled soon in NABLAC, speaks to this thing. It's not just about healthcare products, but about the entire value chain. A public procurement, but of course, there's also need for the NPA and SAPS to do their job and to deal with people with steel, including politicians. We've been engaging with the president at NABLAC. We hope to have engagement soon around extending the ban on politically exposed persons from doing business with the state. We need to enhance it. And again, to respond to Oliver Ishmael's question, should I think the bill passed constitutional muster without a doubt? We have no rights in the Constitution, where the one right which is not subject to limitations, unlike other rights which are subject to limitations, is the right to life. Healthcare, access to quality, healthcare is fundamental to that. And right now, we are denying 84% of society access to quality healthcare. We think that the bill does get the right balance in terms of universal coverage, that basically everyone who is legally within South Africa is entitled to universal healthcare coverage. And of course, for undocumented migrants, it speaks to emergency healthcare. And we have to get the right balance, because if you're going to say healthcare to anybody within the country, you might open a floodgate for people from neighboring states or wherever in the world who don't have that healthcare would come to South Africa. But I think it provides the right balance, because it speaks to documented migrant workers, it speaks to refugees, it also speaks to emergency care for undocumented migrants. I think that's the right balance. We also have private healthcare providers under the NHI, but they're contracted by the NHI, so you're not denying a person the freedom of choice. You're not creating facilities, but the NHI will be all encompassing umbrella for the nation. And other countries have done it. Across Europe, Canada, many other countries, with great success. So I think the vacancy of healthcare workers speaks to the inequitable distribution of resources, that you have a heavily over-resourced private sector, which can have ample staff, which is great for them, but in a healthcare catering for 84% of the country, we have a constant shortage. We can never catch up with the shortage of staff. Chair, I think we speak about expenditure. So currently in South Africa, we spend about 8.5% of the GDP on healthcare. We spend about $862 per person annually. Government expenditure as part of the budget is about 9.3% on healthcare. But our life expectancy is about 54. So we spend more per person. We spend 3 times per person what China does. Yet has a life expectancy of 72. We spend not too far from what Russia achieves, but it has a life expectancy of 62. Our expenditure is quite similar to Brazil. And again, they're doing better than us. So I think the point is that with us, we're spending half of our expenditure on 14% of the population and half on 84%. It's obvious that system can't work. This is why you have people queuing from 4 a.m. in the morning in day hospitals in Cape Town for Bonado. Israeli children being turned away from hospitals when their lives are in danger, and often as a consequence to that. So if we want to have access to quality health care, we need to make sure we have access to quality distribution of the resources. The money spent is enough cumulatively, but not distributed in an equal way. And it's just simply not sustainable. So we are already having a problem of immigration of healthcare workers. We're training nurses and doctors to go to New Zealand, to Dubai, to Canada. But that's because they often work in extremely overstressed conditions in public healthcare institutions, again, because they're even inequitable resources. And of course, the other countries simply push on offering better wages. So we also need to look at what are the salaries we pay healthcare workers. How can we help attract them to retain? That's the fundamental solution to it. But yeah, the system now is not working, is not sustainable, we have to fix it, both private and public. We have healthcare workers in Kosovo work in the private sector. They're worried about unaffordable medical aid premiums. They are worried about the jobs, that's why we made the point about there's a need to assure any workers whose jobs are at risk to be absorbed. We can't throw people into unemployment queue. These are skilled workers who want to make a contribution. But the healthcare workers, who are also members, they're highly stressed. They're overwhelmed by the huge amount of patients they have to see with minimal resources. And again, they all want to play a role. But you can't expect a healthcare worker in a Haderfast day hospital to perform optimally when they're overwhelmed. How does a doctor work well when she works a 48-hour shift? I think Air France didn't start off well. They were destroyed during World War II, bludgeoned into oblivion, literally. But they managed to build up, and they built up by making hard decisions, which we now need to do. But the status quo is not sustainable. China, we have to currency transactions as one option. There are other options. We think we need to have a discussion informed by best practice from colleagues in SARS, etc. But the point is, we need to be creative and think about how we can sustain it. Chapter on that, we'll see. Public health care is in a good situation. Before 1994, it didn't exist for 90% of society, in essence. After 1994, government did very well to expand it, but it's never going to catch up with what you have in a very unequal distribution of resources. It's simply not sustainable. So we don't need to equate the issue of corruption versus inequality. We need to deal with both of them. You can't say, let's fix this one and ignore the other one. So I think for us, the payroll tax will replace the medical aid contribution, so we'll replace one cost with another cost. But currently, we also have to acknowledge the hidden costs for workers who often have to spend huge amounts of money on out-of-pocket debt, often inhibits them from getting the quality care they need, which has a cost to the lives, to the families, etc. There's a cost to people who can't afford healthcare, the state is overwhelmed, and that costs people dying unnecessarily. First is Kosovo, VAT is an aggressive tax because it treats everyone the same. So you pay the same amount of tax on meat, whether you're a worker, whether you're unemployed, whether you're wealthy. So it's an aggressive tax. We think we need to shift more to progressive tax, which provides protection for the poor and shifts the burden to those who can afford it. The other subculture, I think our point is that the status quo is unsustainable. This is a fundamental moral issue, one of the greatest issues facing the sixth administration, the sixth parliament. We cannot simply be content with 84% of our population being denied access to quality health care. There's also an economic issue. How will a worker be productive if they're infected with TB, if they're dying from unnecessary, easily preventable diseases? How does it make sense that Cape Town is the TB capital of the world, yet we have top quality health institutions here? So we have to address the inequality issue. The medical system is dominated by monopolies. This is why we see excessive profiteering, nothing with productive costs or inputs, simply about profiteering. About inflation. We have several political parties complaining about electricity tariff hikes, which are outstripping inflation, but it's interesting that some are quiet about the same thing around private medical profiteering. But the point is that even those workers who are lucky to have medical aid, they simply cannot keep up with the medical aid tariff hikes. It really is bleeding workers and it's putting them in a terrible choice of choosing whether to continue and not be able to fund for this, or to cancel medical aid and take a risk and then pay the consequence when they get sick or hospitalized. And we think the presidency will play a key role to help them protect the NHI from excessive profiteering. And again, it speaks to the need to overhaul the public procurement system. But I think also, Honourable Chair, it speaks to the need for us to fast track the health master plan to build a local, to expand the local manufacturing capacity, because that is going to reduce costs, etc., as opposed to importing them. To Honourable Sokocha and Munyai, we have had a huge amount of engagement with COSATU members across our affiliates. And now the healthcare rules are sensitive issues, so we have to handle it sensitively. We have to continue these engagements throughout the implementation process of the NHI, because workers, like everyone else, have questions. They don't have a single view. But there's support from our members for many years as it is for an NHI, from those members who can't afford medical aid, who are struggling to pay payments, who are being bled by co-payments, but also for those who cannot even get into medical aid because they simply earn too little. So we have ongoing engagement with us, with members. I think, Chair, just to unroll my eyes, before getting to the end, we are condemning workers to death. Many of our diseases are irrepresentable. TB, other diseases are manageable, or even at times, if you like, curable, like cancer, but we're denying people access to the treatment they need. We often see patients either being turned away at public health institutions because they are afraid, or patients just losing hope because their queues are too long and they can't afford to be studying in queues the whole day when they need to go to work. So, Chair, I think our plea to Parliament is that, and of course, Parliament must do its due diligence, and I think we appreciate the extraordinary efforts this committee has done for the past 2 years to go to provinces to hold huge, extensive public hearings. I think you've included about 140 organizations in memory, so we right. I think our plea is for the National Assembly to conclude its processes during the course of this year, and for the National Council of Provinces to begin its work this year and to conclude ideally by June next year. Because again, we'll have to hold public hearings at the NCP level. But we want to see it concluded in essence during this sixth administration. That would give space for the President to sign into law. We couldn't afford to see it not being passed by this Parliament. It's been too long. And of course, you have many similar work. There's about 11 or so supplementary bills, if I'm right, and I can be corrected, which need to follow suit after this foundation bill. And of course, we speak to the issue of building blocks, appropriations, etc. So there's a huge amount of work. We know this won't happen overnight, but let's get the bill done. Chair, I think just to the last question for yourself, Honourable Chair. Yes, so I think our point about the primary healthcare is a point of emphasis. We believe it's a foundation, it's central to the NHI and its objectives. So I think our point is just to elevate it in the objectives of the bill. And Chair, I'll make sure the 2 units, the fraud and prevention and the corruption units, if they have distinct different roles, complementary roles, I think perhaps just to clarify those roles. But yeah, let me stop there from the Chair, Honourable Chair. I hope I've answered all the questions and hope I didn't take too long. Thanks very much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much for giving such a broad explanation of what the Honourable Members was uncertain about. We really appreciate it, and also for saving us a bit of time, and also for the accolades about the work that we've been performing over the last 2 years. So we really appreciate that coming from you, Mr. Potts. As far as Honourable Ismail's concern that she raised earlier, I've been in discussion with Mr. Bundy, who confirms that all submissions, no submissions were affected, both the written submissions and the electronic submissions. So as it stands now, the fire has not affected any of the work that we had received prior to the fire, and any work that we have done, as well as any of our recordings as far as the NHI bubble is concerned. So I hope that puts that one to rest in the book. And then before I continue, maybe a last word, or last comment, last word sounds of that, let me say a last comment before I let you go. And you're very welcome to stay on the platform to get some.
So the connection was a little bit slow. Mr. Lynch, would you like to say any final words?
Yes, I believe I'm not being heard so well.
I think just to thank Mr. giving us space to raise our views. I think you were very generous in the amount of time you gave us. I was quite surprised when you were told you'd give us 45 minutes to present. So I think it's a positive sign that the committee has really gone out to hear the public. We know this is a contentious issue. Our time is part of the best shortcut processes. I think this committee can't be accused of that. She's gone the extra mile and beyond to be inclusive. So I think, Chair, we already are pleased and we will support the committee in its deliberations. This is critical work. We have to get it right. But we're confident we will. We're confident in the team led by the Department of Health and the DDG of Dr. Crisp and his team. We've had very positive engagement with MedLec. I think we're all on the same page. And I think, Chair, the pleasure is simply for Parliament to just work. Diligently, let's get this bill done by next year, I would assume, and let it be on the President's desk for him to sign into law. And that's just the beginning of the hard work. But I think, Chair, as Kosato, we are unashamed here in support of the NHI bill. It's going to be a huge radical shift for the better for the country at large. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, we're going to move straight on. We have the South African Communist Party about to debate on the NHI bill, and we do have the Professor Badu on the platform. I've seen him on the platform. I'm going to welcome him to the portfolio committee meeting and ask him to introduce the rest of his team and go straight on to his presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, we welcome the opportunity to make this presentation as the South African Communist Party, and I'm sure I have my colleague, I didn't see her name, but it's Alex Mashilu, who's also part of the national leadership structure of the party, the Central Committee. In this presentation, Chair, we just want to move quickly and given the time constraints to say that we're going to focus on three issues. First is just a general commentary on the bill so that you understand the basis through which we are making this bill. We're going to highlight some of the aspects of the bill that may need support, clarity, sorry. And the last part is just to share, some of things we can learn from the NHI. To the extent in which they go to the bill or they inform the transitional period is a matter that we are also open to. Okay, the first thing is that we welcome the bill for several reasons. First and foremost, it is indeed a direct response to, and it marks a decisive, a break with the present unequal, irrational two-tier health system, which is a system that also reflects, the persisting and worsening income and wealth inequalities in South Africa. So the NHI needs to be understood also within that broader context and within the broader social determinants of healthcare, because it's not just about the system, it's about other broader determinants. And health and wealth inequality is one of those determinants that needs to be understood. And then the second issue we want to raise here, Chair, is that, this bill is about redistribution, a major redistribution of existing healthcare resources. So we always sometimes hear people saying that, where are you going to get the resources? We are talking about
really existing resources. That is what much of the emphasis, whether those resources are financial or they are human, that are existing resources. I think we all are aware of how much we are spending on healthcare now as a country, not just as government. You know, over 400 billion. Some states are saying maybe we may be even reaching towards half a trillion rand in the next few years. So this is the extent that the country has huge resources. But we know there are how that's spent. You know, when you look at, you break it down, you know, it's maldistribution of resources. It's waste. It's all kinds of things. And of course, we should also not talk about corruption that could also contribute to that. Not just public sector, but also in the private sectors. As someone who has been a member of the medical council, have you know, the regulatory council, have experienced such cases, which I think members of parliament will be much more familiar than most people, given, you know, of medical corruption in the medical scheme industry. So being about redistribution is very, very important to emphasize. And therefore, it feeds into the general program of government to redistribute existing resources in this country. However, Chair, we think that redistribution of the health sector, as outlined in the objectives of the bill, the objectives section part of the bill, it's very, very clear, even in the bill, that you need a system-wide structural transformation approach. So it's not either or, you know, is it public sector, is it private sector? You know, which one do you fix first? And so on. Because the system is the problem. It's not the public or the private. So we cannot transform the public health sector without simultaneously transforming the private health sector, and vice versa, because they are related in many ways, whether it's about financing, a lot of money in the public sector subsidizes the private sector, a lot of money in the private sector takes away resources from the public sector, for instance, the movement of doctors, people in or health professionals, people double dipping, people working two jobs in South Africa. So this is not the time to tinker with the present too tired healthcare system. You know, and we believe that this bill provides a solid foundation for such transformation. The other issue is that, you know, the bill and people, you know, don't realize this, is that by providing health care for all, it guarantees that good health care and on a comprehensive basis, not on a limited package, to everyone for life. Now those of us who've got medical schemes and so on, you know, we can only have that if we've got jobs. For most of us, if we don't have jobs, we don't have medical aid, so we are not guaranteed. And second point, which is at the heart of is one of the core proposal of this bill, is ability to access care based on need, not on access to, not on ability to pay. So free at the point of service is critical to ensure that it is not money that determines whether you have health care, you get good health care or not. And this principle is very, very critical. So, Chair, the other general comment we want to make is to remind ourselves that the NHI enjoys popular support, okay? Not just, and there are even studies that have been done to show that people, if they are asked basic questions of
whether they, you know, in terms of access to healthcare and so on, they will support NHI, especially around its core features and principle. The first one being universal coverage and social solidarity. Even those who are not sure of NHI, partly this because of some myth or misunderstanding, will come and say, yeah, we are for quality health care for all, which is about health coverage. They will also say, yeah, we are for solidarity, social solidarity. So there's a strong support around that. And even though there may be misunderstanding or the pretension to misunderstanding about what universal coverage means, but we know what we talk about universal health coverage, we're talking about having that access on same terms, on same terms. In other words, you know, you don't say someone who's got a platinum medical scheme and other one has got a gold medical scheme with different benefits and so on, and someone in the public sector or that with more services, access to service and so on, and then you say that is universal coverage. No, it has to be on same terms, and that is what WHO and the world have defined this. It's a universal definition. It's not a South African because we are of a special type. No, it is a universal definition that it has to be on the same terms, and the resources have to be redistributed to those who need healthcare most. And who are those? The working class and the poor, the majority of South Africans. So I think that is very, very important. The other principle that I think it's around the need for a publicly financed and publicly administered a fund, you know, which acts as a single and a strategic purchaser of health services delivered by accredited public and we will say social and private sectors. Okay, so this is very, very important. Because you want accountability. You don't want to outsource this important function to the present administrators of insurance schemes. And I'll talk later about that, about the fund. And I've talked about free point of service, which from our point of view is that, you know, healthcare service must be prepaid predominantly through tax contribution and based on your ability to pay, meaning no out-of-pocket, no longer premiums, no co-payments, and services delivered according to need. But also there is an important point, especially in given the recent challenges facing the public sector around corruption, state capture corruption, or what we call corporate state capture corruption, because it's not just government officials involved in corruption, it's the private sector. As I've mentioned, for instance, our experience in medical schemes, a lot of corruption that is going on there. But it's also against policies that promote fiscal austerity on healthcare. Seeing healthcare as a cost rather than, so there's a popular support that you can't have an NHI under a policies, especially macroeconomic policies that supports fiscal austerity, literally cutting and cutting and cutting healthcare, especially in the public sector. Because if you do that, you are in other ways expanding the public the private health sector. So this is very, very important, and it will be important even in this bill, as we suggest, to strengthen those aspects of the bill that talks to accountability, transparency, and a well-resourced public health sector. But let me just finally point on our last comment on a general comment is our own distractors that, you know, and this is not uncommon that the NHI has got its own detractors, not distractors, detractors. And this, it has happened over years, you know, where similar major health reforms have taken place. You know, whether it is, in the UK, in Canada, you know, currently now we see in the United States around the medical care for all a bill that is now before US Congress, or the NHI implementation in South Korea. So what you actually see is that the same forces that benefit from the status quo tend to be the most relentless resistance to universal healthcare reforms. So we are not alone. And what is very interesting is that the themes around which they seek to shape the terms of debate are more the same. You know, where will the money come from? You know, fix the public sector first. It's unworkable, it's unaffordable, you know, similar terms like those. So this is something that also needs to be understood within that general international context, where NHI or similar efforts have been advanced around the world. And indeed, they've been advanced. In fact, the United Nations have declared 2030 as a target to achieve universal coverage in most countries in the world. They should have make sure that by 2030 we achieve those targets. So this is something very, very important to emphasize. But Chair, having said that, one does not necessarily say that, you know, it is just, criticism of NHI is just a noise. No, there may be a noise, a lot of it actually could be a noise, but there's also some who claim that while they're opposed to NHI or they've got criticism of it, they support the principles of universal health coverage and social solidarity. I'm sure you have heard that in your public hearings as well. But what is quite surprising and maybe disappointing is that there's very little evidence of any alternative proposals. Very concrete detail. I mean, the call for detailed HI bill that should even announce how much it will cost is one of the calls of people, you know, in public debates. But none of them have ever proposed any concrete detailed proposal alternative to NHI bill. And not only that, even if they propose such proposals, because I've come across them, neither advances universal coverage, neither advances comprehensive health coverage, neither advances social solidarity. So, you know, I mean, one of them, which I could mention here, you know, I think it was Free Market Foundation, you know, proposed that, you know, maybe we should just give South Africa medical vouchers to shop around in the marketplace. So that's some of the proposals that have been advanced. So it's ridiculous, of course. And so health inequalities in our two-tier health system is not something that preoccupy most of the proposals.
I'm not saying that everyone, but most of the proposals we have come across. Now, when it comes to the specific point, the first thing we want to raise, you know, while we are endorsing generally the bill, is that, you know, maybe some interpretation needs to be clarified on private sector. It may sound very innocent what private sector means, but in the dominant, in the minds of many, private sector basically means private business. Okay? You know, and sometimes we seem to assume that, you know, that is the case, but that's what it means in most cases. So the bill presents a two polar structure. Is you're either private or you are public. We think that, you know, reality is more than that. We do have other sectors in the society, the third sector called the social sector, which can be distinguished from the private health sector, private hospitals that are profit oriented, you know, big pharmaceutical companies and so on, including even at the level of provision, you know. So this is very, very important that we, you know, we are just saying that, you know, maybe in our commentary we should add that part, the social sector, and define it quite clearly. I mean, it could lead to NGOs who will not feel comfortable to be told that they're their private sector. It could involve, you know, I've just heard, you know, the
phrase when you've given someone the gears within the speech.
Honorable Clark, please mute your microphone.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Then, on the NHI fund, which is the core proposal of the bill, basically emphasize the central role of the state in funding and organizing a new universal health system. So we reject, obviously, the proposal for outsourcing this role to medical schemes. It's not in the bill, but it is something that in the proposals we've seen in public, that there are calls for such. And we really feel that the fund, it's not be understood just only as a funding, finance part, but it's also will change the way, you know, healthcare is delivered, because it will influence the behavior of all actors in the industry, whether it's private providers, by changing the way we pay them, the payment mechanism, by setting the rules for procurement through as a strategic purchase, and therefore saving costs and so on. So it's basically a direct response to our current fragmented health funding pockets within the state and medical schemes sector, or private sector, you know. The other important point we want to raise on the fund is that we have not found it much emphasized, but we will assume that it may want to focus on resourcing the public sector, because currently it is the public sector that have suffered, you know, significant resources away from it towards the private sector. So we can't attract enough doctors, and even if we need doctors, there's little capacity to produce adequate human resources to address the historical, you know, pre-post 94 spatial disparities are still with us within the provinces, within districts, you know, especially in the rural or so-called former homelands. These are very, very important points that, and where the greatest need will be felt. So public sector should be recognized in the bill as the backbone of the NHI, and therefore requires significant resource from that point of view. Then the issue of, services, I think it is quite clear in the bill, and we agree that there are sections there. We just want to highlight that part, that even when we talk about comprehensive coverage, which we strongly believe and that's what NHI should be all about, but they must be rooted in primary healthcare approach. You know, this is something that has informed the progressive movement since 1994, but has never been fully implemented. So it's just to support the earlier point of strengthening the public health sector to say that primary health care will be do that. It will contribute significantly as well to reducing the costs of healthcare as well. And let me talk about the point I made earlier about corruption and be upfront that we should anticipate, of course, that NHI fund will be a prime target of forces of corporate capture and corruption in all its shapes and colors, and that's for sure. And the NHI, yes, it has proposed some inbuilt mechanisms inside, but we support that, including those investigative capacities and so on. But I really think that there should be more transparency and accountability, you know, in the use of funds and ensuring that those funds are directed where they are needed most. And this is where I think, Chair, we, by greater transparency, I will say that we basically say that the way things are done we should try to do more. For instance, the way CEOs are appointed, the board is appointed, there should be a lot of transparency around that. These committees, advisory pricing committees, and so on, there should be an important transparency process, and that will enhance automatically accountability of the fund. Otherwise, we support a lot of measures aimed at improving public accountability of the fund. On the role of medical schemes, we think that this is very, very important to understand that it is not about looking at the role of medical schemes in different schemes. I think we understand the bill may not explain, but I think in the health policy, there is a major explanation of why we need to shift resources away from employer-based or employment-based health coverage in a form of medical schemes, which currently commands around 45% of healthcare funding in this country. I mean, this is absurd. And nothing has so much has ever been seen around the world where a voluntary private health insurance makes up such a significant portion of healthcare funding. So there has to be, in the public sector, we always say, right sizing or downsizing. Yes, there has to be a downsizing of medical schemes, so that they play less role than they are playing currently in a form of a complementary cover. The alternative is the status quo, to duplicate resources, and it will maintain the two-tier healthcare system. So, Chair, that's much. And on the level of NHI, we think that, Parliament and government, they should consider
having most any study, an assessment of the lessons that can be drawn from COVID-19, and the measures we've implemented during the state of national emergency. Those lessons should be helpful without preempting what could, you know, could be the outcome of that. But I think some of the questions could revolve around our preparedness, public health emergency preparedness as a country, and what this could mean under a unified healthcare system. So that we are ready, we do that. To the extent in which this are for the purpose of the bill, we are open to that it could be not necessarily be here, but are we incorporating elements of public health emergency preparedness for NHI? So this is and for future emergencies that may look at that, and there's a couple of experiences that we can draw on around that. The other issue is that, you know, if we look at the lessons of NHI, is that there's been you will need to look at, you know, the capacity of the state in national planning and coordination. Yes, during COVID, we have seen actually much more greater planning and coordination than we have seen pre-COVID. You know, whether this is with regard to issues of deployment of human resources, where they are needed most, whether it's about vaccine, equipment, national health information systems, and so on. So we could also consider coordination with provinces to ensure, you know, interactions with healthcare providers and private sector, and also community mobilization. So that's much. I hope I was on time, Chair. I will end up there. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that presentation. It's very welcome, and we take note of what you have said. The board of participants. We have a number of members who want to ask some questions to you, Honourable Munyai, Ismail, Sutacha, Blas, Gela, Abbott, Munyai, Ismail, Sutacha, Blas, Gela, Abbott, and some members that would have had to leave already to get the bus to Parliament today. So we do excuse them, including Honourable Shepherd Wiley and all other members who have to take the bus to Parliament for the meeting. In that order, Honourable members?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I think we welcome the presentation of the SACT by Comrade Tebogo Paulo. The first question is the following. You have made reference to the need to differentiate the private sector from the social sector. In the view of the SACT, how should this differentiation be affected in practice? We want to get to sense how this would be effective in practice. In Japan, for example, contracting the private sector is based on the cost-based reinvestment with more room for profit-driven providers. One must appreciate that Japan is an apex of imperialist capital market economy. Do you invest in the social sector being prioritized in contracting for provision of care of services? Will you also propose the NHI emulates that methodology of Japan or model in terms of contracting only with non-profit providers? I want also to ask further, Honorable Chair, if you permit. Let's deal with it. I want, if you can address the myth that really some of the dictators of the NHI may be dealing with. For instance, some of the media argue that healthcare will be nationalized. If you can really perhaps clarify some of those issues in SACP context. Some argue that the country cannot afford NHI. It is too expensive. If that means could be clarified. Some argue that this is additional tax burden. If you can address that myth again. Other myth, they argue that this NHI fund will be state-owned enterprises. If you can please clarify this myth. Other myth or other detractors are those that want to argue for universal health coverage. But without NHI itself, what would be your view? Thank you.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the presentation. I just have a few questions. My first question, under the board's current governance and organizational structure, do you recommend that the private sector be included on the board to improve the accountability and legitimacy of the board? Do you actually recommend parliamentary oversight to mitigate the threat of corruption? My second question, noting that the NHI will be sourcing funds from Texas and the tax basis of Africa is relatively small, do you feel that the sum of taxes will be sufficient to carry the bill, since presently the private sector is in the forefront in assisting with the services to the country? My third question, are members of your organization presently using public health facilities or are they on medical aid? Would all members be willing to forfeit their rights and freedom of choice under the NHI? Fourth question, we already know of at least 104 billion rand in medical negligence claims. Will this be even worse under the NHI? My fifth question, compromise the Office of Health Standards and Compliance presently cannot manage to monitor even 20% of our healthcare facilities. Any affected health facilities need to reach certain compliance requirements. We know that most public healthcare facilities will not meet NHI standards. Will this stifle or impact health services to communities? The next question, does the SACP consider that the NHI bill in its current form will be providing a health value-based model and will it be sustainable? My last question, we have already seen cadres seeking to solve their own pockets as we have seen in the digital system. What suggestions can you provide to protect the funds from political interference? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just a few questions from my side, Chair. My first question, Chair, I would like to thank the presentation by Mr. Badu. As I said to the previous presenter from COSATU, I want to repeat and say that your presentation is very progressive and talks to the poor of this country. I'm therefore going to ask you the same question I asked to COSATU. What is the South African Communist Party's response to those who are opposed to the bill, in particular, and the NHI principle in general, like what we have just heard from other forum, that they would take government and this department to the Constitutional Court, because according to them, the bill, when it becomes law, will not pass the constitutional muster. How does the South African Communist Party take this threats? How will you and your members respond to these threats of going to block this noble cause? The cause of ensuring that the poor of this country have access to quality and affordable health like them, which are the rich. Of course, we live in a democratic dispensation which your organization played a crucial role to achieve. Everyone is free to go to court, including them. But now these noble cause are threatened in this way. What do you say to this as the South African Communist Party? Mr. Bhadu, you mentioned in your presentation that the detractors of the National Health Insurance argue that you must leave the private sector alone and go and fix the public sector, the clinics and the hospitals. At the same time, you gave a picture on how healthcare funding is skewed in this country in favor of the private healthcare. To those then who say go and fix the public sector, will you not ask them to question and question in return that if what must the public sector be fixed and health workers be employed when we see that they, you see day in and day out the healthcare budget getting a cut? This portfolio committee and all its members without exception have complained about the budget cuts in health. So will you not ask the question of what must the fixing be done if all the money goes to the private and less to the public? Do you think that this question will be in order? And Chairperson, my last question to the South African Communist Party is, what is the view of the South African Communist Party on the notion of the right to economic activity by the private for profit sector and a freedom of choice for citizens as claimed by some of those who oppose the NHI? Would you regard these rights as more superior to the constitutional right to access to healthcare as enshrined in Section 27 or the right to life is enshrined in Section 11. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable Clark.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I ask you, in your view, based on the proof of address requirements, will it not exclude a majority of the population from gaining access to the fund? And then secondly, considering your rejection of the new liberal approach to healthcare, looking at the history of the unsuccessful attempts of socialism and communism in the world, what makes the NHI any different to the historically failed communist policies? In your view, what key characteristics of the NHI will be successfully implemented? Thank you.
And the next chapter two.
Yes, you are, Honorable Gela.
Oh, thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Let me also join you and honorable ESO culture by welcoming the presentation from honorable Van, indeed, honorable ESO culture. It's a progressive presentation. I also agree with you. But I've got only one question to ask Chairperson. Based on the comments made by the SACP presenter on slide 14, are there any additions that are proposed in Section 19 and Section 57 of the bill which address the need for transparency and accountability to be central in the activities of the NHI fund? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just the one question. What is the view of SACP sequencing of SACP's view on comments previously made that the government must first fix the public health system before the NHI is
Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Any other member who wants to raise any point? If not, I just want to speak about 2 points with you. The one has to do with your noting the current specialized statutory prepaid mandatory social insurances. And I just want to take you to the white paper that speaks about it and then states that during the transitional phase, alignment of the benefits covered through POIDA, ODIMWA, UIF, and RAF, as well as the reimbursement strategies for contracted providers will be aligned with those of NHI institutional and organizational reforms. This is also mentioned in clauses 57 and 58. If you are concerned that it maybe does not address all of that which you wish for it to do, would it therefore be doable that it be included in the regulations and the implementation plan? And on my last point has to do with this notion that the NHI will destroy the economy and jobs, and it's been alluded to by many others. Munwekiai has spoken about what's called myths, which has raised quite a number of these myths. This is one of those which have been raised a number of times. And what would your view be in terms of the socioeconomic impact assessment study this year that has been done? Have you ever looked at this with regards to the BOEF, the SSP, and any other benchmarking to assess how implementation of the NHI portable assistance has contributed to economic growth and job creation? It'd be great to hear your views on those and also to answer the questions of all of the honorable members and the comments. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. For the comments, I must say this quite a number of questions. I may not be able to answer maybe on the time allocated, but I'll try as much as I can. When it comes to the first question, around sector versus private sector, I think all we are saying is that you don't just have a public sector and a private sector in South Africa. You've got also a social sector. You know, people involved in healthcare, but their preoccupation is private sector, understood as much of for-profit entities and so on. So we just want to make that clarity very, very clear. Because I can tell you, even an ordinary person, when you say private sector, you just think business as such. So it's important to do that. Actually, a number of legislation in South Africa try to recognize that we're a mixed economy, that we do have a private sector, which is still significant, but we still have a social sector. And we had a public sector. So both of them have to be recognized. And this is not to say that, prioritization should be on the social sector per se, but just to allow that space for people also to, to develop a different forms of organization and so on. The other issue I want to raise is so what we are saying that in the interpretation of terms, try to do that. Quickly, there's been a range of issues that relates to some misunderstanding around the concept of NHI and what it implies. And I think it's captured in both what Munyaye has been saying and also I think that the lady, I forgot her name, but calling the gentleman clearly. But what I would say is that, first and foremost, what we in the party are saying and that's how we understand the deal. And we think the deal is actually saying that as well. But please, social means above private profits. Okay. So the only way you can cover everyone on same terms is to place social health needs of the people, the health of the people first before profits. And what it implies, and that is in line with you know, what we call social rights in our constitution, the right to health care, you know, that irrespective of the income, whether I've got income or I don't have income, I've got the right to health care. And so health should not be commodified or be subjected to marketization, to the markets. If you do that, and we all know what happens, is that only profitable patients will access that health care. If you are not profitable patient, which means I don't make money out of your health, your ill care, you won't have access. And that's what it means, the private sector in South Africa and around the world. So we are making that point. And by so saying, we are not saying that, and I think that's what the bill also says, is that we're not saying that, you know, do away with private health sector. We say that, no, we should influence the way they deliver health care. Okay, so there will still be healthcare, private healthcare, accredited one will have access to the funds, private healthcare, together with the public healthcare. But in that scheme of things, we also have to recognize that only the public sector can become the core, the backbone. Nowhere in the world have we ever found a private health sector providing universal health care to all. No way. It cannot, it has never happened. It is only through government, through the state, that it is possible. So proposals, which I've gave one example, that the private sector can provide universal health coverage has no basis at all. There's no evidence anywhere in the world, especially in our country, where we've got even voluntary private health insurance.
Okay, so
I think it addresses those. And then the issues of affordability I've talked about. But you see, the terms of will it be affordable, will it be sustainable, is a question that really should be turned upside down and say, how do we make NHI affordable? How do we make NHI sustainable? I think that's a good question, because without NHI, the current two-tier healthcare system is not sustainable. It's not leading us anywhere. Unless there is any other concrete proposal that can show that it can achieve that without having a prepayment mechanism such as taxation, which you know is roundly accepted around the world, that you can only finance universal coverage out of public financing, public funding, not out of pockets of people, not out of premiums and then so on, but through public financing. That's very, very important to recognize. Yes, you know, a lot of noise resistance come from those who benefit, as I've said, from the present, and in particular the profiteers, you know, the people who profit most, who benefit most from the status quo, are those who make a lot of money out of our health. Okay, so it's expected that they are more likely to resist, but you know, like all South Africans, we should be prepared to engage and listen to their concerns. But such concerns should not undermine the core principles on which we all stand together, that we need a universal.
Have we just lost you, Mr. Pardo? Ms. Machalamba?
Hello, I just lost there.
Yes, you're back. Thank you. Please continue.
Okay. Yes, yes. Please, I don't know what happened, but I just wanted to say that we will support, we really need to understand that, whatever outcome of this process should at least cohere around the core principles that the NHI bill has. Otherwise, the alternative is not an NHI as universally understood. Yes, the someone asked, this sounds like a socialist proposal, and whether this thing could, if it has failed somewhere else, how can it fail? I can't say that it is only socialists who support NHR. I would be wrong around that for universal coverage, okay? You don't need to be a socialist to be convinced that treating health as a commodity can achieve health care for all, especially in a country like ours, with obscene levels of income and wealth inequality. You need to make sure that our good healthcare is not dependent on the healthcare market or on the market forces, as I would say. That there is a state out there that protects people from financial hardships when they access healthcare, and that such healthcare is good. I mean, countries like socialist countries, yes, have been quite in the forefront of advancing healthcare before, such as Cuba, and in many aspects, but so does even in advanced economies. It is working people of those countries, poor and working class people, who called for their own national health insurance. Whether that is in a form of NHS in UK or in Canada, or another form in other countries, that it has been the working people, even in those societies, that it demanded a quality health care. So it's understood as such, and I'm sure you will agree that it is a good health care for all. And in such societies, private health sector market, either in a form of insurance, don't play any significant role in the health lives of the countries, of those countries, except in one country, which, interestingly, people are also rising up, calling for a national health insurance, that is the United States, which has got one of the most dysfunctional and unequal health systems in the world, which is largely more or less private driven. Yeah, so this is a part of the point I would like to make with regard to the specific question you also asked, Chair, about, should we be satisfied with what the white paper is saying about transitional measures to eliminate fragmentation of public health funding? As you know, public health funding, health funding is so fragmented. It's in many pockets. It's in the medical schemes, it's out of pocket expenses, it is in the health budget, it is in UIF, it is all over. Make it quite difficult actually to use it maximally for cross-subsidization and to support. So the argument, which is linked to the argument made earlier and in a form of a question, to say, we have got a small tax base
Okay, let's remind ourselves what we said earlier. This is a almost nearly 5 trillion economy. This is South Africa, 5 trillion. We are not a small economy in terms of wealth, 5 trillion economy of rents. And 8.5 of that, over 400 billion of rent, we spend money on health. That is already expensive. That's already money we spend. Yeah, it may not be in a form of tax, all that money, but that is money we spend on healthcare. All the NHI, from our perspective, is calling for is that how do we redistribute these resources in such a way that they benefit, they improve the health outcomes, okay? So out of these resources, surely we can find a lot of, we can make it affordable with even existing resources. And the most effective way you can do that, you know, as experience shows, is through a public finance mechanism, not through a private driven mechanism. This is health we're talking about. It's not about a hamburger, buying a hamburger. It's about buying health care, life and death of people. We have to guarantee health care and make it sure that it is affordable to everyone. So I will say that the current proposals in the bill that try to do that. Actually, they are doing that. They say we must look at new sources of funding. We must strengthen existing funding that we have, not subjected to fiscal austerity, neoliberal fiscal austerity. We need to make sure that a lot of resources, we move away from employer base so that the workers who get in these medical schemes, you know, contribute to a common pot, which is the NHI fund, for the benefit of everyone, for the benefit of everyone. So there's a lot of money out there that can be mobilized. So as I said, the question is, let us make sure, even if it takes a number of years, as suggested by the transitional plan, to reach that, but we have committed ourselves to make it more affordable. Okay, so that's my quick answer to affordability and sustainability. Chair, I think the other questions I would have loved to have time to look at, but I think with my time and your time, I may not be able to answer those. Thanks.
Thank you very much for your presentation, and secondly for answering these questions. We appreciate you being so open and frank about answering those questions. We are about to adjourn, honorable members. I'm just going to make a couple of remarks, and before I do that, I'm going to give Mr. Pardo a last opportunity to say some words, and then we will move on to the concluding remarks and the adjourn for today. You're very welcome, Mr. Pardo.
So, Richard,
All right, let me just give the concluding remark to the presenter, and then I'll come to your point, Honorable Wilson.
Okay, thanks once again for the opportunity, and we look forward for the, passage of this bill, which we think that it is a landmark piece of legislation that will ensure that, you know, we once and for all guarantee good healthcare coverage for all South Africans. Thanks, Chair, once again.
Thank you very much. Honorable Wilson?
Thank you, Chair. I've been trying to get to this call for a while, but we seem to miss each other. We have some hold-up. There's two issues I'd like to raise, and this is predominantly as far as the portfolio is concerned. It has nothing to do with the presentations we've received. Chair, on a couple of occasions now, in fact, more than one occasion, We have had an open prison comparative done to the national health system in the United Kingdom, as well as Thailand and other countries. Now, prior to COVID, and I think it was raised by Dr. Blumel, that the portfolio committee was going to go and do oversight. I think if I'm under correction to see the NHS, and I think the system in Thailand. I know there was application made for this trip to be authorized. I'm not sure how far that went. But I think at this stage, and because it comes up so very often, is there any chance we can follow up on this and see if the portfolio committee cannot go over to see the NHS and possibly another system so that we can interrogate how they started and how they got to today? That's number one. And number two, she was just a concern, and I might be completely out of line here. One of the presentations, or one of the people who has not presented in terms of the NHI, but who must be very closely involved and have opinions on this, is the Council for Medical Schemes. And I would really like them to come and talk to us and see how NHI in the long term is going to impact them. They do report to us. We get presentations from them often. And I would really like to get their opinion on where we are now and how it will affect the Council for Medical Schemes in the long term. I don't know if it's possible. I'm not sure if they made applications, but I really would like to get their sort of their side of the story, their angle on the NHI board. I thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Wilson. Let me start with your first point. We are in the process, the committee secretary and I, at looking at possible visits to the UK and the possible visit to Thailand. You probably would have heard that the borders were only opened up 2 days ago, and due to COVID, of course, it has been delayed. So we are in discussion. And the committee secretary and I will be meeting again to have a further discussion on this possibility. And we are still hoping to have it done before we start with the clause by clause work. But yes, we're doing everything that we possibly can to see whether we can get some, learn something from those who have already implemented something similar. And then, as far as the Council for Medical Schemes are concerned, we have made every effort to contact all of those who have made submissions or have indicated that they want to do oral presentations. The Council for Medical Schemes are not one of those, and therefore we are not going to allow them an opportunity in these public hearings. But we are mindful that they are returning to us in the second quarter, and I guess at that stage we'd be able to also ask them what their views would be on the NHI bill, etc. So you can raise your concerns with them when they do come back to present to us early in the next quarter. Honourable members, for tomorrow, and I hope those answer your questions, Honourable Wilson.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, to remind you for tomorrow, we're starting at 8:55, again a tight schedule in terms of us having a sitting in the afternoon, so we're having Committee of Medical Deans at 9 o'clock in the morning, followed by the hour at 10:15, and then after that we're doing consideration and adoption of minutes. So have a wonderful sitting today. We appreciate you for coming to be part of this meeting, and all of our presenters also for participating today. And this meeting is very much adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Recording stopped.